Honorable Chair Bamboo, followed by Honorable Noble, Honorable Self, Honorable Beardman. Honorable Chair Bamboo.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the background which has been quoted here currently in terms of the findings of the Public Protect, it says on page 437 that it is my considered view that as the President publicly accepted the implementation of all measures, that is the residentialist, and she benefited from the enormous capital investment from the non-security installation that is covered residence. A reasonable part of the expenditure towards the installations that were not identified as security measures in the list compiled by security experts in pursuit of the security evolution should be borne by him and his friends. I think I'm really benefiting is against the law. And there is a context within which we had said, let's have the Public Protector here to come and explain the report, the secure and campus report, because what again getting her here, and people are putting words in her mouth, but she can easily come here to give context to all these issues. When we give a proposal that 90% of the money that should be paid should come from the president, that is a reasonable intervention. It's proper suggestions. If she can come, she can give a clear context that 90% is reasonable, or she can advise the committee in terms of what is a reasonable amount of money that should be paid. But also, I'm sensing, Chair, a very deep sense of dishonesty on the part of the ruling party, because we agreed here that we are not about to review the Public Protector's report. There's unanimity even that we are not about to review the Public Protector's report. We're not going to challenge that. Because that is what, if herself, she says in the letter which she wrote to the President that the only institutions that can review her findings are the court of law. I think that is a position that we must take. So whatever process we engage in here should ultimately lead to the conclusion that I am page 442 that the President should consult the Treasury and the Public Works and LAPS in determining how much the percentage that they should pay for the upgrading, which went on to create upgrading. They've already done the last question in the SIU report. Must reprimand the ministers, and then they must give a report to the National Assembly to Parliament in terms of the actions which is going to take in that regard. But it looks like the 10-point approach which is being proposed from the ANC side is directed towards reviewing and overturning the decisions of the Public Protector. Would not have the power to do so as this particular committee. We will be engaging in an illegal activity altogether to want to overturn the decisions of the Public Protector. Also, it will be setting a wrong precedent when people break the law and are engaged in wrong administrative decisions. And when the Public Protector finds out, they know that they have politicians from the same political party who are going to attend those in Parliament. We can't set such a wrong precedent. So must not venture into the dangerous territory of reviewing the findings and the immediate actions of the Public Protector as proposed. So let's stay far away from that in terms of what should happen. And is it like Honorable Kessan says, well, the President was not aware of the upgrades or the details of it. He was aware of the details. He was aware of the details. He says it in page 279 that from time to time was receiving briefings. That's what he says himself. And if you are saying that he must not come, he can come here. He will be able to speak for himself that he was aware You are preventing me from coming to answer a simple question that we are aware of the day-to-day activities and from time to time we're receiving reports and what happened. You are going to answer for himself. But you are speaking on his behalf as if he's normal. What is difficult with bringing the public protector here to give clear context to the things which you interpret are her conclusions? And after the public protector, you can bring whoever you want to bring, but ask maybe the president has come and be held accountable, because ultimately this goes back to his dog, he's the one who recommended the architects to come. And those are the concrete things that we need to deal with as a part of the way forward. And honestly speaking, I don't think that would drive joy as members of this parliament to be dragged into the ANC process where there's a resolution that you must just go and defend blindly there. And then you just want to utilize up to legitimize your own unconstitutional defense of the president. Because we're not going to be part of a process which is about legitimizing, not holding a president accountable for a loss of millions of friends which were supposed to improve the living conditions of our people. We do not want to be dragged into a wrong thing because it will set a wrong precedent. And as the public professor says that if government, if the executive is the one that breaks the law, every other person is going to become law unto themselves and we're going to be in ourselves into anarchy. So such must be prevented, and we know there are parties and political issues, but it's a counter to defend here. So that is what we must be concerned about. It's not about yourself now, it's about the future of saying we can have institutions in place to hold all of us accountable. Thank you very much.
Can't you hear me, Marino?
No.
Oh, so this is your point. No, you can come back. Let's allow the honourable member to say it anyway. Honourable member, can you just repeat what you have said? Because it's a mic on. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just really want to personally to react to the Honourable Kumbai, because she raised a number of points which I think are both erroneous and problematic. She started off by referring to the powers of the Ministry of Police under the National Points Act. And for life to me, I have been struggling to understand why the Kamba was declared the national key point in the first place. Because having declared the national key point, none of the procedures that are provided for in the National Key Points Act were in fact followed. because in terms of the National Key Points Act, the owner of the property is supposed to upgrade the security to the satisfaction of the National Key Points Committee. And that's the responsibility of the owner of the property. Now, that procedure clearly wasn't followed. So the question then becomes, why was the National Key Points Act invoked in the first place? And the only answer that I can find is that in terms of Section 10 of that Act, it is an offence if any person finishes in any manner whatsoever any information relating to the security upgrades, security measures applicable as or in respect of any national key point, or in respect of any incident that occurred there without being legally obliged or entitled to do so, or without the disclosure or publication of said information being imparted by or on the authority then the minister, except as it may be strictly necessary for the performance of functions in regard to his employment in connection with the ownership of, or as may be necessary to protect the place concerned. Now, that is Section 10 of the National Key Points Act. That placed a blanket of secrecy over the Mkanga upgrade, and it prevented anybody who was involved in that upgrade from saying anything about it, giving it to the media, whistleblowing, whatever. This is one of the worst apartheid era bits of legislation. No wonder the president says get a move on with it reenacting it properly. But that's the only reason that the Minister of Police, I mean, the Honourable Kubai said that there was some reason why the Minister of Police was involved. It has to do with the National Key Points Act. Not so. The National Key Points Act is still a mystery to me about why it was invoked in the first place. But secondly, she then went on to say that the public protector was precluded, unlike the special investigating unit, referring matters to the National Prosecuting Authority. Again, not true. If you look at Section 64C of the Public Protector Act, you will read as follows, that at any time prior to, during, or after an investigation, if he or she is of the opinion that the facts disclosed were commissioned by an offence by any person, to bring the matter to the notice of the relevant authority charged with prosecutions. That's what the Public Protector Act provides for. So it was entirely possible for the Public Protector to refer the matter to the NPA or to a prosecuting authority or to lay a charge or whatever else he wanted to do. So the suggestion that it was in some way or another that the SIU report was somehow further reaching or had more teeth than the Public Protector's report is, in my respectful opinion, misguided. Now, she also went on to talk about a moral obligation and based it on the word consciously that is contained in the Public Protector's report in paragraph 10.915. Now, consciously means reasonably or justly. So you could read that paragraph as follows. It is also my considered view that the amount in question should be based on the cost of the installation of some or all the items and cannot be reasonably or justly, that she's used the word consciously, accepted as security measures. That is the recommendation, well, it's not the recommendation, but the finding made by the Public Protector that this body has the duty to examine and to uphold and to enforce. You see, the basis of that argument is to try and say, no, the President somehow didn't have legal obligation, he merely had moral obligation to do that. And that is profoundly untrue. That is profoundly untrue. And it derives, as the previous speaker said, from the President in a number of different ways. Firstly, from Section 83 of the Constitution, that says that the President has a duty to uphold, defend, and respect the Constitution. And in doing so, he has a duty to uphold, defend, and respect Section 217 that deals with procurement, and that procurement must happen in accordance with a system that is fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective. He didn't do that. Moreover, in his oath of office, in Schedule 2, which is where the oath of office of the President is to be found, There the president says that he will obey, observe, uphold and maintain the constitution and all other laws of the republic, including the PNA. Now, it's very convenient for everybody to say, oh, well, you know, he wasn't concerned with details. But I promise you, if somebody came along to my house and started digging a big trench to put a swimming pool in my backyard, I'd be asking some questions. Who pays for this? You know, who's responsible for it? If somebody put up a pavilion in my, it's actually not big enough for a pavilion. So I live in a very small house. But, you know, if somebody arrived and put a pavilion up, or an amphitheater up, surely, or landscape the gardens, surely you start asking yourself the question, what was going on here? You know, and you're not just anybody. You're the president of South Africa. You've got immense resources. You can ask questions. You can demand answers. And what did the president do? The president did nothing. He was stum. And I think that when the public protector, correctly in my view, says that it is my considered view that the president tacitly accepted the implementation of all the measures of his residents and has unduly benefited from the enormous capital investment from the non-security installations of his private residence, the reasonable profit of the expenditure towards the installations that were not identified as security measures in the list compiled by security experts in pursuit of the security evaluation should be borne by him and his family. So the question arises then, a twofold question. How is it that the president was so unaware of what was going on that he didn't ask a single soul, he didn't raise a single objection, he didn't say a word? The second question is, if that is so and we accept that he shares responsibility, the question is, for what and how much? And I think if we can answer those questions, or he can answer those questions for us, we will have discharged our responsibility in large measure. Thank you.
So, thank you, Chairperson. I want to focus a bit on the issue of the EIU that was raised on the squad that he explained in the proceedings. But I think it's quite important that we look at the different roles, because I think it's a bit of a conversation about that. And I think also proposals regarding calling witnesses and so on. But it does take note of what is the legal framework of the EIU, what did they do, and what we've got before us. Now, if you go to page 15 and 16 of the EIU report, it's indicated that they have regard to the force of the tasking and the public protector. I think you can the point that this needs to be emphasized. As a most of it has been set out about the respective aspects of the regulation of the tasking and those of the public protector are quite different from the terms of reference set out for the EIU proclamation. In addition, the methodology and the process adopted by the ECU differ markedly from those found in the other investigations. More particularly, as emergency under the ECU's processes are principally outcomes-driven. As a result, significant emphasis in the ECU investigations is gathering evidence to ensure that the following outcomes are achieved. First, employees of the state institution investigated who are suspect of being guilty of misconduct are subject disciplinary action by the head of state institution. Second, individuals who are suspended of having committed criminal offences are duly prosecuted. And third, civil proceedings are instituted in the civil courts to protect the state's financial and other interests, and in particular to recover damages or loss that have been suffered by the state institution being investigated. So it's quite important to note that the ECU is required to conduct its own investigations and gather evidence independently. Then in terms of the proclamation, in terms of Section 2.1a of the ECIU Act, the President may by proclamation require the ECIU to investigate matters where, among other things, the following alleged serious maladministration in connection with the affairs of any state institution, improper or unlawful conduct by employees of the state institution, unlawful appropriation or expenditure of public money or property, and as we indicated previously, that proclamation was issued on 20 December 2030. And in respect of the upgrades and alterations to the President's Resolution of Conduct, the proclamation as required by Section 2.3 of the ECIU Act sets up the term of reference. And it dealt with the following issues specifically. The procurement of goods, works or services in a manner that was not fair, equitable, transparent, competitive or cost-effective. the procurement of goods, works, or services in a manner that was not consistent with applicable statutory or other regulation provisions or prescriptions. The procurement of goods, works, or services from contractors, suppliers, or service providers in which DPW personnel or their close family members or friends have financial and material interest. The manipulation of DPW's procurement process by any unlawful scheme or practice, such as overquoting, setting of orders. The evading of competitive bidding processes by renewing, expanding, or amending existing contracts. The lawfulness and validity of payments made to contractors, suppliers, service providers. And then undeclared or unauthorized interest held by DP personnel in contracts, suppliers, service providers who are appointed to provide goods, goods, or services. The losses infringed suffered by the state due to administration of the case of DPW relating to such matters as overpayments, duplicate payments, payments made despite inadequate performance and the like. Now, the proclamation specifies that these matters that occurred between 1 January 2008 and 20 December 2013. Now, it's quite important to note, because we've got a lot of possible people, you know, the other side wants to bring to the fore. It was quite, it emerged from the report, in the following group or category of persons.
Colonel Bergman, can you just hold there? There seems to be some disturbance emanating from the back, and something is very amusing. We are conducting proceedings of Parliament, and we really ask everyone present to just observe the proceedings as such. If there's a problem with the mic, the technicians can deal with it, and I'm sure they'll do so. Or move to a place where there is a mic that is working. Continue on, Lord Bergman.
So the following categories of persons were investigated. Officials and employees of DPW were in any way involved in the procurement of goods, works or services for the upgrades and the payments that were made. The 15 consultants and contractors were appointed by the DPW to effect upgrades. The following other categories of persons who might include the procurement of goods, works or services, the SAS and SAEF officials who played a role in the upgrade, and then as a particular examine the possible roles of Minister Dodge, Deputy Minister Bukopan Zulu, who were mentioned in various documents relating to upgrades and were alleged by some DPW officials that issued instructions. And then they also said they might mention that the president was mentioned in some documents and by officials who interviewed, his possible involvement was examined. Quite important to note that the SIU does not postpone any action until the final report is done. Relevant steps are taken by, for instance, the collation of information and to seek relief from the High Court. And so forth. So it's quite important to note in terms of the role, it is outcomes based. Now in that process, it's also important to note that the SIU Act grants SIU investigators to really order any person to appear before the SIU and produce books, documents or objects under the person's control, and to require a person to answer questions on the oath even if the answers incriminate the person. Now maybe just to go to the talks performed. Because that relates to the question of witnesses and so on. On page 31 of the report is quite clear. A total of 110 interviews were conducted with various persons. Of these, 54 were from DPW, 7 were from SAPS, 1 was from the State Security Agency, and 3 from SANDF. A further 17 were from other state departments of agencies. In addition, a total of 28 people connected to consultants and contractors were engaged to effect the upgrades and alterations also interviewed. A total of 59 statements from persons who assisted in asserting what transpired and why certain decisions were taken have been drawn into the process. And then also to indicate there was about 28 requests that were served on state officials, consultants and contractors for more information. A total of 9 section 5-2D notices were served on banks, consultants and contractors. For the record, bank records for 7 DPW officials comprising of 75 bank accounts were scrutinized. And that is then indicated in mark E, the annex chip. And then 2 current officials and 1 former official of DPW, 7 consultants and 3 contractors were questioned under in terms of 75BC. So it's important to note that the appointment, and that's the evaluation they've made after they come through this process, that the appointment of 13 of the 15 consultants and contractors did not comply with applicable strategy or regulatory measures. And then, of course, there were unauthorized variations to the scope of work, over-design, over-payment of professional fees. And 34 14 consultants and contractors submitted fraudulent tax clearance certificates in the DPW. And then two of the contractors who appointed did not have the required right to perform the construction work. So it's quite clear that this is in line also with the submission that was made by the Honourable Kubai, that the process was fraud, you know, shortcuts and not sticking to the applicable legislation. And it's quite clear from the SIU's report where they did a thorough investigation and interviews with these relevant persons that was properly investigated. Then very importantly, and it was referred to previously as well, the 10 points that is indicated and also previously referred to as a measurement of getting a picture of the legality in crisis. And the cabinet memo again, as we've indicated previously, only two of those 10 steps were followed. So that is really the benchmark against which we as a committee must also look at the various reports in making also the assessments of the necessary recommendations that will come from us, whether that there was compliance to the cabinet memo and in what areas of non-compliance could there be constituents be made of who is really responsible for this process. There was also mention made of, I think by one of the parties, about where that amount of 155 million comes from. Now, if you go to, if you go to the annexures on page 215, where the claims are set out, there is an indication of the correlation of that specific amount on page 215. And it also indicated the motivation for the recovery. So there is a key indication, and the SIU also indicates in its report it used two experts when they did this compilation of the specific over expenditure. So it's quite clear that there was a process followed in terms of assessing the relevant values. So Chairperson, from our side, in coming to a conclusion on the road ahead, it's quite clear that we must look at all the reports, we must look at the different mandates, but specifically also at the specific roles and in terms of the specific recommendations.
Honourable Singh.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. No, I have to agree with the Honourable Chairman that certainly we have to look at all the reports. And I think we've got no problem with the SIU report and the findings and the recommendations. All that needs to be done now is action needs to be taken out of the report. And action has already started. I mean, the DPW people and Makania is being sued in the court of law and criminally charged, etc., etc. But that's the SIU report. But when it comes to public protective support, I mean, we take issue with the fact, firstly, that the President in his letter of 11th of September disagrees with the assertion that the courts of the public protector are by law not subject to any legal or second guessing by minister, and the findings made and remedial action taken by the public protector can only be judicially reviewed and set aside by a court of law. Then it's a role, the different differing interpretations on the role of public protector. Now, the President is saying it's akin to that of an ombuds, but we have an SCA ruling that says otherwise. Right? And I must admit, I think Honorable Mochega also might have read this article here by Professor Ntende Mahango from he's got a different view. So we've got a UCT view, and we've got a Revis view. Now, two professors think two different things. But then the point is that, Chairperson, I would like to contend that, firstly, the President had not answered all the questions that were put to him by the public protector. And in his own admission, he has not answered all the questions. Secondly, he is not following the remedial action for these other reasons. So when it comes to the SIU report, there's no problem. When it comes to the public protector's report, we take issue with the fact that the President has not, Honorable President, has not complied with what the public protector is saying in the report. I mean, I think that's what we're really saying, because firstly, he disagrees with their mandate. And secondly, you won't take the mid-election. Now, how do we as committee determine, firstly, what the mandate of the public protector is? We look at the ACA ruling. I mean, that's the judgment that we've had. There's no other point of reference. So I don't know how we can argue that from the other side. And then the remedial action follows thereafter. Because if we don't agree with their role, then surely you won't take the remedial action that she's recommended.
The Honourable
Lakulin.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it is clear, or it needs to be clear, that in this committee we are not reviewing the public protector's report because we have no mandate to do so. So ours is to consider the report, including the response by the President, and also make our own recommendations to Parliament, because that is our responsibility. So the public protector's report raised some concerns about the interference by the then minister and deputy minister during the process of this security upgrade. Now we are saying that the president was briefed according to this report, yes, and he doesn't bring around the responses that the public protector questions were asking. Then my take will be that to some of those questions that he didn't respond to was because he didn't have answers. Because if he had decided to get involved into this project, to know each and everything that is happening there, he will be transgressing according to our own understanding. It will be wrong of him to do so. So he knew that there was work that was being done at his house, of course, because he lived there. He knew that. But he didn't have the time to know each and everything. How much is being spent here, what are the security features and everything. We cannot expect him to be a jack of all trades, to know everything. That is something that we cannot assume that he knew. Then as for the crawl and all these other things that we mentioned there, I'll talk to the issue of the crawl and the chicken run. Those things were there in his home state. So if you come and say that you want to erect security measures here and these things must be moved to that other part, who is responsible for the construction of those things? The person who moved this thing to that other side must be responsible for that, because I have my house. I didn't initiate that I want these security features and this. I don't know what are the security features. I didn't know that these features will be removed from here to there. So the person removing that must be responsible for the erection of it. As of the issue of colluding, when it comes to looting the state, yes, we agree. But SIU have already started the process of dealing with those demands. So we are saying everyone who's involved in this collusion must pay. There are already criminal charges laid against those people. There are civil claims laid against those people. So that is why it's expected that everyone who contributed into this must pay. And we cannot say that we are holding the president responsible for something that is done by someone else. I have a helper at home. If that person decided to do something wrong, I cannot be held responsible. Because that person is not a minor. They do this thing knowing very well what the consequences are. You cannot loot and expect to go scot-free. No, you can't do that. You can't do that. And we cannot say that the president was involved then, the bank account of whoever must be investigated and checked. That's the work of the SIU, and they have already done it. So I cannot be forced by someone to do something wrong, knowing very well that this will come to bite me. Then I will say that, okay, it will go to the president. No, I can't do that. I must be held responsible for my actions. So when it comes to the issue of the public protector's role and responsibilities and function. I think this is not our mandate to go there, honorable members. We are not reviewing a report. We are not reviewing any report. We are considering all the reports that are before us, and we will do as such. So as for the issue of us taking mandate as members of the AFC from the Tuli House, we are not apologetic about the members of the ASC, and we don't need to be reminded of our identity. We know we have our headquarters called the Tuli House, so everyone of us sitting here is taking that a mandate from their political parties. Hence, we are here in Parliament to push the mandate of our political parties. So we are not apologetic about that. We are members of the ANC and we are proud to belong to the headquarters called the Tuli House. So we cannot be reminded by anyone about those things. We know our identity. Then when it comes to the issue of the bond, when it comes to the issue of the bond, is that you like the Tuli House so much that you keep on reminding us of it, and we are proud to be members of it. So when it comes to the issue of the bond, we all know that a bond is a private matter between myself and that particular institution. And if any institution, financial institution, can reveal to anyone that I have a bond of so much with them, I'll take them to us, because that is confidential information. So we believe from the answer that was given by the president in the National Assembly that he has a bond. And we all know that when they started this thing of security upgrade, he has already started reconstructing his house long before this security upgrading came to the fore. So we cannot say that we all have bonds, of which I believe is true. But I don't think Honorable Malema or Honorable Shibambu would be happy to find that the bond has been revealed to everyone to see in this world. So those are the issues, Comrade Honorable Shepherdson.
Honorable Mulder.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to respond to a couple of things mentioned by our colleagues. I would like to start off by what our Honorable colleague, Ms. Kubai, basically said. She made the point to say that we acknowledge that the President knew, but he did not do anything wrong. Nothing was done wrong. Nothing illegal, nothing illegitimate, nothing wrong. He knew. That was what she said. But that is not what the public protector says. I want to refer to Honorable Kubai before 30 on the public protector's report, paragraph 10.4.2. The public protector refers to the complaint, and she says the first complaint allegation that the expenditure constitutes opulence at a grand scale is substantiated. Next, she says the acts and omissions that allowed the excessive expenditure due to non-security items and failure to arrest the wild cost escalation, especially after the story broke in the media in December 2009, constitute improper conduct and maladministration. By whom? Is the person who is benefiting from this process, is he exempted? He didn't have to take any action whatsoever. The Honorable Mr. Selfson now clearly indicated. Contractors move in, they start building a swimming pool in the back of my house. I don't ask anything, I don't inquire anything. The public protector finds that this constitutes improper conduct and maladministration. And she goes on, same page 430, paragraph 10.5.2. She finds the allegation that the excessive expenditure added substantial value to the president's private property at the expense of the state is substantiated. It's a fact. The excessive and improper manner in which the Nkandla project was implemented resulted in substantial value being unduly added to the president's private property. The acts and omissions that allowed this to happen constitute unlawful conduct and improper conduct and maladministration. Arnold Kubai says nothing that he did was wrong. Then I go to the Public Protector's Report on page 439, paragraph 10.10.1.5, where she says the following, she finds the following. It is also not unreasonable to expect that when the news broke in December 2009 of alleged exorbitant amounts at the time, 65 million, on questioned security installations at his private residence, the dictate of Section 96 and 237 of the Constitution and the Executive Ethics Code required of President Zuma to take reasonable steps to order an immediate inquiry into the situation and immediate correction of any irregularities and excesses. Was that done? The answer is no. Nothing was done. She says, I find it not unreasonable to expect to have taken those steps. The next paragraph, 10.10.1.6, she finds his failure to act in protection of state resources constitutes a violation of paragraph 2 of the Executive Ethics Code and accordingly amounts to conduct that is inconsistent with his office as a member of cabinet as contemplated by Section 96 of the Constitution. I can continue on this thing. Findings by the Public Protector of maladministration, improper conduct, breach of the provisions of the Constitution and of certain acts. Who's involved? It's the President. Our colleague, the Honourable Lakuda, says we cannot help keep the President responsible for any actions that he did not take. But what about actions that he did not take that he should have taken? It's called omissions. Omissions. And it's not as if these things happened in isolation. During all of these processes, and we can go back to Hansard, I was a member of that fourth parliament, and many of us around the table were members of that parliament. I can remember that question time after question time to the president, one question was there almost every time about Nkanda. Time after time after time. That was on the agenda throughout. The news broke in the media. Should the president have taken steps to say, hey, something is very wrong here, let's intervene? All of Takura says with regard to Takura with regard to the question that the president didn't answer. Well, maybe he didn't answer because he didn't know the answers. He was not informed, he didn't know this and that. Bear with me, Chairperson, I want to refer you to page 342 of the Public Protector's Report. I've mentioned this afternoon that the Public Protector asked the President 29 questions. 29. The President decided to ignore 18 of the 29 questions. Page 342. Now we can go through the questions. I want to go through the questions because then we can see if it's true that the President couldn't answer because he didn't know. The first question, which he asked the President, whether he or the presidency requested the security measures that they be installed at his private residence. It's a straightforward question. Why is it relevant? Because it's point number one of the 10-point plan that the Honourable Motsepe is referring to. Simple question. The President, did you request these security measures? Yes or no? No answer. Second one. Where was any state informed of the cost of the proposed security measures? Simple question. Yes or no? Third one, whether a notice declaring his private residence a national key point was served on him. Because in terms of the National Key Point Act, it must be served on the president. It's vital to know. Unless what the Honourable self is saying is correct. We started the process, we are running into trouble, people are blowing whistle all over the place, he needs to shut this down, quickly proclaim this place a national key point in both Section 10 and keep everything up. No answer. Fourth question. What he understood to be his responsibilities as the owner of the national key point. The Minister of Police says, I declare it a national key point. The Act says the owner has certain responsibilities. Mr. President, what did you understand then, because your part of this is your government, would be your responsibilities? No answer. Five. What measures he put to secure his progress, a resident as required by the National Key Point Act? No answer. Six. Whether he was advised that some of the cost of securing his private residence as a national key point would be recovered from him. No answer, but In some of the other things where the Deputy Minister answered, it seems that she did have discussions with him. He did say drop a document. A document was drawn up which disappeared at some stage. Question 7. When he was presented by Mr. Makanda for the design of the project. Simple question. Your architect, Mr. President, did he represent him? Question 8. When we received a letter consisting of a detailed report on progress made to the project that was addressed to him by the former Minister of Mashlangu Kabinde on 5 November 2010. Simple question, Mr. President. Did you receive such a letter from the new minister, yes or no? No answer. I have an idea that he did receive a letter because maybe there was a reply to this letter. Question 9. When he received the document setting out the apportionment of costs of the project that was prepared by the Department of Public Works, did you receive it, yes or no? No answer. Then, did the Deputy Minister discuss the conversion of the fire pool to swimming pool in and whether he was aware of the reasons for this conversion? No reply. Whether he was consulted about the relocation of the household that were affected by the implementation of the project. Were you consulted, yes or no? It's a simple question, but it's rather important because a possible 120,000 rand per onzal became 8 million apiece. Question 12. Whether he was opposed to more contractors working on the site during phase 2 of the project. Yes or no, because there are evidence throughout that the President insisted the same contractors should be used in phase 2. Now, when we speak about the companies, the consultants and companies who were appointed in a wrongful way, and didn't have tax clearances, etc., I don't know what the answer is. But a company used, when it was originally employed by the President, did not have to fulfill those obligations. Because it was a private matter between the President, it was not the state. But when they became the contractors on behalf of the state, it was a completely different matter. And if we kept to the processes, it could not have happened. The evidence suggests the President insisted the same company should be used in phase 2. And the bulk of the money went to those two companies. Question 13. Whether the Deputy Minister discussed the design of the military tanning, yes or no? 14. Whether he would be willing to disclose the amount that he paid for the construction of the new dwellings on his property? No answer. How often he uses his private residence for official purposes? Because that's the argument why it had to be done. Despite the fact that there are three other official residents for president. I'm not sure when the Honourable Dr. Motsepe referred earlier to the things happening in his house, was that to his private house or his official house, his private house? 16. Why would he prefer using his private residence for official businesses rather than one of the official residents available to him? 17. Whether at any stage, whether he at any stage inquired into the cost of the project. It's a vital question, Mr. President. Did you or did you not? And if you didn't, why didn't you? Were you not interested? It's not important. Why not? 18. If not, if you did not inquire into the cost of the project, if not, whether he as head of state did not feel obliged to do so as a substantial amount of public money was obviously being spent. Today we know, more than 200 million. One thing that we talk to Parliament about rooting out corruption, setting the example, etc. Maybe there was a duty on the President to take certain steps. Now, the Honourable Dacoo also referred to just how to say, well, if I've got somebody in my employ and that person does something wrong, I wash my hands, I've got nothing to do with it. No, it can never be so. The Honourable Mai correctly pointed out earlier today, is that the kind of responsibility and oversight that we, is that the norm, the standard that we want to set in South Africa? If that's the case, politicians will never have to take responsibility for anything. If the officials don't do it, you cannot work like that. So that's not oversight. That's not accepting responsibility. So, Chairperson, we can continue discussing these things. But I think that we must come at some point where we need to look in terms of the rules, in terms of the resolution adopted by Parliament. Rule 138 was given to us as an instrument to fulfill our task. And one of the most important aspects of that rule basically is for us to be able to call people to appear in front of this committee to assist us. And we've mentioned many names. We should discuss in principle, are we going to call people, yes or no? And if we are going to call people, who are we going to call? And talk with us, as Mr. Gadi suggested just now, and take it further from there. Thank you.
Honourable Maimani. Thank you, Chairperson.
I really wanted to punctuate the point that Honorable Murda just made, which is about the fact that in essence vicarious liability, which is the idea that Honorable Thakude, I apologize, Deputy Chief, with that in fact in the colluding case of the stadium, when the fine was then concluded, should they have gone to the foreman who were working on site, is the question that I proposed before. No, it went to the Chief Executive Officer. And I think the principle should apply. You can't then suddenly now in this instance you say we now transfer liability to the people who worked on site. Surely there must be some liability that is transferred to the principal agent who was the president. Because here, he directed somebody he personally knew, he personally appointed, who acted as project manager to go drive the process in whatever way he would want. So I don't think we should spend more time on this issue, whether we should debate that the president has liability or not. It's clear that he does. I think the second point I want to make here, Chairperson, I'd like a ruling actually on this matter, is what is the committee's view on remedial action? I know it's been questioned that's been put forward, but I think even post this discussion, the contention I've heard today has been as follows. The president knew, I think nobody debates that, that we accept that the public protector's report, we are not here to adjust, amend, or anything. If those two earlier statements exist in that order, then therefore there is the third question. If I'm not here to adjust amends, I'm here to exercise oversight in making sure that that remedial action must be taken, must take place. So that, I think in some ways, that satisfies me that we can in some ways set aside the public protector report as being dealt with and argue the case, when is the president going to comply with it? Because I'm not trying to re-air or edit this. I'm trying to make sure that the action that needs to be taken is in fact taken place. Otherwise, what we're going to spend time doing is trying to undermine the report or maybe in fact try and adjust it. And I don't think we should be in that space. I think we must accept it as is. We must then take action to say, when is the president going to comply? And then I think I'll put it to this House, and I think we need to draw that conclusion. Because we can talk around the point as much as we can. I think we must draw that list, we must decide, and I think that list would be a list without the president. It can include our own manner of people. I think the public protector, advocate, that's going, that's irrelevant. But I think we need to start with that list, otherwise we'll talk around this point all evening. But propose, Chairperson, on those two methods, what is the committee's view on the media election that must take place, because we're not here to adjust. And the second most critical issue is, let's draw that list, conclude that the president will come and appear, and then take the matter from there.
Honourable Malema.
Thank you very much, the Chairperson. I think that sometimes we want to defend even things that are not defendable. And that's what happens when you love the party more than the country. I mean, Honourable Thakude, to say the president didn't know. President didn't know these things. I mean, I don't think you spoke to him. I don't think you have money from him to come and speak like that. And if you do, then he also misled you. Because how can the president not know this question? Whether he or the president requested the security measures be installed at his private residence. Let's say you're answering for him. He didn't know. He didn't know that he asked or did not ask for installations to be made at his house. I think we're being dishonest with the process here. The president, who has got a bond, wouldn't be willing to disclose how much he has paid to the either the architect or the contractor. He doesn't know how much he has paid. Because the response to God was that the president didn't know. The president is not a jack of all trades. Not knowing or knowing whether you pay the contractor or not You don't have to be a jack of all trades. You are the one who takes responsibility for such actions. So to come and defend with everything we have to a point where we become emotional is going to expose us. I tell you now, because the only person who can tell us whether he knew or not is the president. He didn't ask that question to the public protector. He can come and answer again. So we need to agree that the president must come. Those things of the crawl and the chicken run, let's leave the remedial action of the public protector to take place. To put an argument that those things were there, therefore if you shift them, you have to take responsibility. It's wrong. Because the public protector cites those things as examples of some of the things that must be paid. Then the president must go sit down with police and treasury to determine whether the things should be paid or there are other things which would have to be added on the long list. I think we're creating a problem, Chairperson. If President Zuma cannot be held accountable, no one should be held accountable. All must be fired, not cooperate. Why should one man be above the law? Everybody else must be held accountable. President Zuma is the only one. You are creating a problem with the public protector, as I read in a report, that if it is the government who breaks the law, you are now saying to everyone on the street, you must just be lawlessness and do as you wish. If President Zuma cannot be held accountable, and this committee, by the prosecuting authority, then no one else must be. And what are we doing to the constitution of this country? What are we doing to this democracy? In defense of one individual, we must create a state of lawlessness, anarchy, the highest form of disorder. You are slowly pushing this country to that side because people who are being held accountable at some point are going to say, but why should it be us only when the CEO was involved in the whole thing? If you say you can't be held responsible for your helpers' illegal activities which are happening in your house, then you must revisit the law. Because one day they are going to find a stolen car you are just honorable deputy with. That's the day you will appreciate the law. Because you can't come and say, I didn't know that my helper was a thief. And even when they tell you in between that this person is stealing, you have no problem. Until they say he has stolen more cars. Only then I was never part of this thing. Wait for the day they find stolen goods in your house, brought by your helper. That day you will know that there is no such excuse of not knowing. Ignorance and not knowing cannot be excused in law. You must take responsibility. And that's what the president must do. And then the example of the bond, I don't think President Zuma has got a bond too. I don't think he has. Plus also his credit record as well. No, it's true. I know his story. He has financial problems, even went to ask money from Mandela and everybody else. It's not a secret. He's got a bad credit record. So I don't think he's got a bond. Here is the whole country accusing you of not having used the sense to build your property. And then you say, I've got a bond. They say, prove it. You will literally do that because you are proving your innocence. Why would, when you have paid money to a contractor after you received that money from the bank, and they ask you, show us, hey, this is private. Something that is going to help clear your name. And you say, no. But even Malema Shibambo will never allow that. I would allow it. How will I allow it? I mean, ask them to leave a public life. The president must know that when you are a president, you cease to be an individual, and you never take leave from yourself. Sleeping, looking down or upward, you remain the president. Public life, when you are accused in the manner in which the president is accused, he was going to gladly produce an evidence that he's got a bond. Why would a person who's got a bond held by the bank to build your own property, and when you are accused, you are scared to produce such evidence which scares your name, and you call it a private matter, when you live public life, a president of the republic, president does not have a bond. And let me tell you, you can say we're hearing this, we're not raising speculations, because there's no report that says that we're raising speculations because the president fails to answer the question. He doesn't have a bond. If he's got a bond, I challenge you, Mr. President, wherever you are, in the building of UN, produce evidence of a bond, if you have it. He doesn't. And as a result, he continues to take the money of the state and then benefit from it illegally, as found by the public protector, because he doesn't have a money of his own. President Zuma has disclosed everything. Everything, including testing public, HIV status. He has disclosed everything. Why would a man who has tested HIV status in public be sent to produce? Testing HIV in public, Deputy Chief Whip, is a private matter. If President Zuma is such a president who doesn't disclose private matters, he has disclosed everything in his defense. And we know some of us why he went to declare a test public HIV and AIDS status. He did so in his defense. Why would he be stopped from disclosing a bond? He doesn't have. So, and none of you can tell us president has got a bond. Only him can come and tell us and produce evidence. So, I think that, Chair, we appreciate the fact that people come from political parties, you know, and we have no problem where people come from the Hood House or Shell House or any other house they want to refer to. We come from houses that leaders of those houses are actually members of parliament and know what is happening in parliament. Unlike being advised by a layman who has never participated in parliament, who knows nothing about parliament, and he ends up giving you wrong advices and making you defend the defenseless. Why would Gwede's advice even matter on such issues? Well, there's never been anything in national government except being a councillor. You are a councillor in some municipality there. So, if you're proud yourself of such advice of people who don't know how national parliament works and what is the experience of participating in such a committee and want to proud yourself, actually you are more experienced than him. You must advise him how parliament works. We don't have a problem with people taking advice who can't tell you what to do and all that. But to be taking advice that makes us do wrong things. And one of those wrong things is to protect a member of the executive from accounting in this parliament. It's wrong. So, Chair, the submission we're making is that let's talk about how do we take forward the remedial actions. Let's talk about how we're going to be summoning people who must come and give evidence here, and that none of us must even be tempted to want to amend the remedial actions of the public protector. You might not like them today, but it's very unfortunate today. Those actions have to be implemented as they are, because they have been implemented before. So let us be consistent, let us respect the Constitution, and the office of the public protector. We're always told here that no, we have no problem with the public protector's office. Honorable Malema must rest assured that the professor's office is not going anywhere and all that. The problem is the individual. Sometimes they overstep. But we are not told how the public protector overstepped by Honorable Kensani. You in as much as you want to articulate the wrong of a public protector, you are unable to demonstrate how she overstepped. You have a problem with an individual, but you can't take it into confidence how this individual overstepped. And as a result, you just attack your character without faith. You're doing the same thing with Honorable Gadier, who quoted the PFMA, and you came very strongly trying to demonstrate that you are going to embarrass him through some proper quotations of how he misrepresented that act. But you never made any reference to that act. Except to say, hey, the Parliament must never create impression here was defending people who are doing wrong things. He was not doing that. The public protector did not overstep. The public protector acted all within her right, and she has given us the remedial actions to be taken. And ours is to say, first things first. Public protector says the president must be held by police and treasury to determine the amount. And then let's do that. Let the president do that. And then from there, tell us a date of when the money will be paid back to the state. And then we follow up the SIU report on the possible prosecution and disciplinary actions as recommended in SIU report, including the public protector report and the interministerial tax team. All those reports which recommend actions to be taken, we follow them up and see if indeed people have been prosecuted and people are being charged at work and appearing before the DC. Any other thing we seek to do will be unconstitutional, and we will not participate in any unconstitutional process. Here, we are here to ensure that oversight is being conducted over the executive and ensuring that indeed the executive takes forward the remedial actions as recommended by the public protector, the SIU, and all other necessary helpers. Thanks.
Honourable Malema, honourable members of the meeting, I just want to draw your attention to page 342 of the public protector report. 7.3.1.3, which he mentions, and I quote the report, however, with the assistance of the Director General of the Presidency, I established on 17 December 2013 from the Register of Financial Interests that the President has declared a mortgage bond in respect of his private residence at Kandla since 2009. I was also given the assurance by the President's legal team that the mortgage bond is still in place. Close quote. I just want to highlight that in light of what was said by yourself earlier in respect of the Honourable President, that in fact the public protector mentions it in a report. There was another hand from the Honourable Kubai.
Thank you, Chair President. I think the day is going and we are starting to see drama now, but I said the other time. I think I cannot go back to drama now. Just to start, I think one of the things that the person that we must try and do is, for example, I think we need to start here in terms of the issues of the National Achievements Act. And when you look at the PP's report, page 11 and page 27, she highlights that the project was initiated by under the National Achievements Act. And that's what I had made reference to. But if you have to look at the response is in line with what is there. Part of why I said that we need to look at the village, and I'll continuously say it, Jefferson, that the reason why we need to look at this, one is the same thing. Was the determination or the declaration of the president's home, private house, as a national people correct and done procedurally? Because that's what they have a duty on. Because you can't act at the end, you know it was done wrong. because the basis of the report and the investigation, that's why I'm writing what the PP is saying. And hence, the response is in line with the PP's assertion, because that's what he said. And that's why I was saying that we need to reflect that. But again, let's go to the National Key Points Act 102 of 1980, Section 3A, where it stipulates what happens with the PP's, with the procedure in terms of once the house or the place has been declared, then the minister takes over. It says in the act. So we shouldn't quote the act stated. There is that paragraph that is there, that we should read the act and quote it substantially and in terms of all references. So that's what I'm saying, Chairperson. We've got to be very, very clear in how we approach these issues. So that we are able to go into. I'm going to appeal to the colleagues. If you differ with me, I think you have the right to speak. I do not interrupt anyone when they were speaking because I feel it is disrespect.
Honourable members, let's respect on the floor.
I'm speaking because I never did that.
And also, honourable members, I want you to address me.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Let's not engage in cross activity where you start interjecting with one another.
No,
honourable members, I'm not going to allow this. Continue with your input, honourable line.
No, Chair, I think the other issues will be taken outside here because there seems to be unfinished business of the youth league. Just to go back on these issues, Chair. Let me continue. That's what I'm saying. I'll take them out. You know, the issue here is, for example, you go to what Honourable Mera was referring to, and I think, Chair, we go again on the PP's report, page 344 to page 345, where there's a response there as well, but maybe let me just highlight, in terms of the response from the president, because as the president highlights his concerns to say, in the manner I have responded, I wasn't under the impression that I'm under investigation as President Zuma. Hence, I have responded in the manner I have. Had I known that I am under investigation, I would have responded differently. That's what the public protector is saying in the report and highlighting. Page 344, what the President's response is. While as you go down, she refers to part of what she's astonished. There's an acknowledgement to say, if I was alerted that you are investigating, I would have provided substantive information. That would be it.
Honourable members, no. Honourable Gadi, if you want the opportunity, then I'll give you the opportunity, but let's allow the honourable members to address the chair and to make a point.
Thanks, Chair. That's typical. I think you're touching on us today. Just to go again, Chairperson. So, I'm saying in reference to that, right, going through all these responses and all that, so they shouldn't be read in isolation. And I appeal earlier as well was to say, let's read the report properly, let's go and quote it properly, and sequence it properly so that we are able to come to those issues that are able to assist us. So just to say from there as well, and just to reiterate, because I've not been convinced by colleagues once. For example, the emphasis on the president coming here. And, you know, we seem even to be playing to the gallery, I mean, to such calling the president respond and say it's another issue. But just to say, Chair, that how this matter is being dealt with and how we are said to be protected. We are protected. Somebody must tell me when he says, I am protecting the president in whatever it takes. What does that mean? Because I'm here, I'm watching the report. I'm going through the report and reflecting my understanding of the report and I'm engaging on content of the report. Because I can simply say somebody has a personal vendetta and might not draw me into the personal vendetta. Is that correct? No. Because we are here in a committee to do our responsibilities as members of parliament, to look at what is before us and engage accordingly. So, Chairperson, another issue that I want to highlight in this, that's something I'm just appealing that we should be able to raise things in the manner that is befitting. Now, when you look at again the issue of how do you have things happen in your house that are happening without knowing, you go back to the key piece report. I'm trying to find some issues of seeing things without referring to the paragraph, where the PP finds that the minister and the deputy minister at some point they were too close to the process in a very uncomfortable manner. And my argument is to say, should have the president gone in detail to be too close to the process, wouldn't that have been a finding against him? That you have gone too close to the process? I thought I might, I think, I'll verify if it's 45, but I'll make sure that it is. But just to say, that's the issue here, Chairperson, that you argue that you need to be involved legally. Would you have the president gone to be close to the process, starting to engage to say how much you're doing this, how much you're doing that? Wouldn't that have been evaluated as being too close to the process and interfering? It would have been. So, I'm begging to understand this argument, Chairperson, that says therefore the president should have made sure. I said earlier on, at some point the project was stopped because there was in evaluation, there was a need to look at what was happening. Let's come to the issue of cost escalation over here. That you find the escalation going forward, through. What are the legal frameworks that guide when cost escalations happen? National Treasury regulations are very clear. The PSMA is very clear in terms of that. Once there's escalation, it needs to be reflected in the budget annually. That's what the office did. That happen? No, it didn't. So that's where again we need to go. So how do you determine? Let's play into the gallery as well and play the devil's advocate. If I am to say the president should have known that basis, there's nothing that is reflected in any of the government documents, not the budget. Something that's cost escalation. So how is he supposed to say, no, you've gone beyond the amount? That's we're paying devil's advocate to say, he should have known. The budget was not adjusted, the overruns were not budgeted for, were not reflected anyway. So, these are the issues that we need to be dealing with in terms of asserting how much did the president know and what would have been the trigger of them. So one trigger we are definitely sure didn't come through, that would have reflected through Treasury and all that. So the other issue that we must go into now is the determination again, Jefferson. The response of the president acknowledges all the reports and acknowledges what has happened. And that's why I read this last paragraph. I didn't read everything. Because the last paragraph says, as president, it's not the last paragraph, it's the last paragraph on page 19. Paragraph 53. That specifically says that the president here in his response is acknowledging all the thoughts and the legislative framework that is governing all this. So I'm not so sure what Chairperson is the issue. Maybe one of the things as well, what I would think it would make more sense, is it not only the report to serve to cabinet, but serve to parliament. Because that would assist and that would continue to make sure that we do go to the legislative accountable. Because that's what we are here to do. So we are not selective in holding accountable executives. But as well, we are not reckless in terms of the law, because we can't. This means, because one of the things that we've got to be conscious about is that if we find ourselves to have flouted even the laws ourselves, the president has remedial action. He can challenge our decision. That is within the framework of the law. So we've got to be responsible in how we do our work. So we've got to be able to say, what are the things represent that? So far, until now, since we started, I am not convinced, Jefferson, that there's a need to call anyone before here. The report are here. We need to look at, as members, as we're not here to start investigation. We're not here to review anyone's report. How to start investigating? When we call people here, what are we doing? Interrogations, what is that? Investigation. If after we have called this person, again, Jefferson, we play the devil's advocate. We call these people, we find that what they are saying contradicts what the PP has written. What do we do? The person says, no, here, I actually argued with the PP to say this paragraph is wrong, I do not agree, this is the evidence. What do we do as a committee? To go back now and say, no, evidence that the PP has used is wrong, we can review the report. So we've got to be very clear what we want to do. Hence, Jefferson, I would not support summoning anyone to this committee, because I do not understand that summoning what would result, what would result in. Because as I'm sitting, my fear is specifically that you call, let's say, for argument's sake, the president here, and he disputes the report and sitting before us, provides evidence. Now we'd be sitting with a constitutional crisis in front of us, which I don't think we should go and venture into. Thank you very much.
Okay. I recognize the Honorable Mulder, the Honorable Malema, the Honorable Seko, the Honorable Shivambu, the Honorable Mocheka. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Honourable by suggesting that we are so scared of a constitutional crisis that we'd rather do nothing. That's what she's going to say, with all due respect. You see, Chairperson, if we are to speak of the report, we must speak of the report in totality. Honourable Kwai says she's just basically quoting from the reports. And then she tried to come to the defense of Honorable President by saying, well, he didn't answer the questions, and why didn't he do that? And she refers us to page 3 or 4, and she says, because he said, at no stage have I either praised or the fact that my conduct was part of any investigation, if I hear I would answer different. That was now an earlier process. But with all due respect to the Honorable Kwai, you just need to read a bit further down. And you should really try to look at page 3 or 5. Where after this argument is put forward on behalf of the President, the public protector finds, and she says the following, 731-9, I was quite astonished by these admissions of the President that he didn't know that he's part of an investigation. That's the finding of the public protector. Why did she say so? Next paragraph, shortly after I received the first complaint in connection with the security upgrade at the President's private residence on 13 December 2011, I informed the Director General of the Presidency of the complaint and met with him in regard to January 2012. I believe that it was reasonable to accept that Dr. Lubisi informed the President accordingly. Next paragraph. On 15 February, I wrote to the President directly, informing him of the complaint that I received from a member of the public was based on the article published by the Mail and Guardian newspaper on 11 November. Everybody in South Africa took notes of that article. The Honourable Kwai is arguing the President did not take notes of that article. 731-10, I informed Dr. Lubisi accordingly in writing on the same day. Next paragraph, on 20 February 2012, I received an acknowledgement of receipt of my letter addressed back to the President from the Interior Secretary for the Dental Support Services that stated that it was received and would be brought to his attention. Not speculation, findings by the public protector. So the Honourable Kwai must not come and tell this committee that he defends the President because the President really didn't know. You cannot go through public life as the President and know nothing. You cannot do that. At some stage you've got to take responsibility. Honourable Kwai further argued, Chairperson, to say that maybe if the President inquired things, he may have been too close to the process, and that would be a problem. What are we talking about? If this was about a project to put up a new nuclear power station, responsibility of the Minister of Energy, and things didn't go according to the rules, I could listen to the Honourable Kubai saying, but you are stretching it a bit far to want to keep the president responsible. How should he know there's a line function minister? This is not what happened. We're not talking about some line function somewhere else. We're not talking about the nuclear or whatever kind of development or project of government. We're talking about the private residence of the president himself. So if there's one project that the president should take responsibility for, he couldn't get close enough to that project. He should have set the example. He should be the first one to inquire what exactly is going on. He refused to answer those questions, and the public protection continued. Chairperson Abdul Kubai goes further. She says, the PMA says this is how the budget should be extended, the wizard of the act says, etc., etc. We all know that all those revisions were just ignored. And I argued earlier today, why were they ignored? For some or other strange reason, all those officials lost their minds or something. They just decided this is our chance. We're going to ignore anything. Is there a different reason why that happened? The report suggests pressure, pressure, pressure. We cannot fail the principle. There will be dire consequences if we do not proceed and do what needs to be done by the powers to be. That was what happened. So the Honourable Kubai said no, we cannot expect the President to have known because the procedures were not followed. Read the documentation. There were more than 11 cost estimates done at various instances throughout the process. And who had been the closest to those cost estimates? Surely the principal agent, the architect, man introduced by the president to the debate. And the principal agent, the architect, said throughout, he contacted, he consulted, he liaised with the president throughout. But not on one instance did the president think, maybe it's a good question, where does the money come from? No, one of them happened. I'm getting this wonderful development in my property. But I don't ask where the money comes from. The reports are quite clear, Chairperson. Everything about this whole saga is a sad story to tell. I hear what the Honourable Chairperson said with regard to the bond, and I think I've also read that paragraph. The legal question that I don't know, and somebody can assist me, is can you register a private bond a land belonging to the Kunyama Trust? I don't know. Can you do that? Can you register a bond in whose name over land that belongs to the Nkunama Trust? I don't know. But there's a bond. That bond must be registered in somebody's name on behalf of somebody over someone's property. I don't know. Thank you, Chairperson.
The Honourable Malema to be followed by the Honourable Maseko. No, thank you, Chair. Just on the point of the bond, I also read that paragraph and I don't accept your intervention. President Zuma doesn't have a bond. The public protector says she was advised of such a registered bond by the DG, and then the legal advisor in the form of Hali. That Hali is very problematic. So anything that comes from that guy, I don't accept it. So there is no evidence. There is no evidence in the public protector's report that says bonds, papers were produced, and as a result, I'm satisfied. Registered bonds in the declaration or whatever, and assurance by legal representatives. So I don't take that. There's no such an existence or such a bond. And as well, the registration of bond on a tribal land. It's a very, very difficult thing. I think the last time we checked, we villagers were not allowed to register a bond on a tribal land. So I don't think housing people might be having a chance on that point. We villagers are better qualified to speak to that point of whether you can register a bond or a tribal land. So I don't know, man. Why should we say the president didn't know escalations and even when the media kept on reporting, Let's say there were no memorandums, internal memorandums inside, you know. But the media days were moved from 27 to 59. We have moved to 69 to 100 and what to what. What is it that the president didn't know, even when the prices kept on increasing? It's not correct, it's not true. And we all know that that is. Especially when it gets written by the media about your house. It's no, you can't take interest. So, the best thing to avoid this is to ensure that the president comes. We want the president to come and answer unanswered questions. And therefore, president can't produce a second evidence because there is no evidence. Because questions were never answered. So he can't come and contradict his answers on public protectors' report, and therefore we are very scared that we are going to create a constitutional crisis. No. On unanswered questions, we demand answers. And therefore there won't be two answers, one answer to the other committee and the other answer to public protector. There's going to be only one answer to us. And on the basis of that, we move forward. And the president seems to be not knowing anything. I don't know, I'm under investigation. When investigations are actually happening at your place, in your own house, questions get sent to you by the public protector. Surely you must know you're under investigation. So it looks like every time he gets into trouble, he plays this ignorance thing. And no, I didn't know. I don't know, and all that. So, but also we seem not to be hearing what is the actual proposal from the other side. What must we do? Yeah. Because you are rejecting everything from this side. What must we do? What must then? So we just come here and talk and go? It can't be. That 10-point plan is 10-point plan of no plan. We're not hearing anything from that plan. Of how do we take forward the remedial action, Honorable Chair? So I think because we have chosen 2 days, today and tomorrow, perhaps the ANC will begin to propose what should happen from tomorrow. Because I just hear a shouting of this report, and the professor must know that we can change these things and all that. But are you saying we must change? If you are not suggesting change, we live by what public protector has recommended, and then we implement it. Because you must come here, bring the proposal, firm proposal that says, let's remove the recommendations of the public protector, and then replace them with the following, which is something we are not going to agree with. If you can't come with that proposal, let's talk about how do we take forward the remedial actions ordered by the public protector. The last thing, Chair, I see some fellow South Africans here with us who were never introduced, and they continuously brief you see. So I don't know what the pain is, because I get very worried when presiding officers get briefed by people who don't know whether they are liberal minds or ANC people or what they mean. Because we must know who is here, especially people who have access to the chair during proceedings. It might be very dangerous. Thank you.
No, Honourable Malema, you see, your apology in the last meeting was noted. And in that meeting, these people who are sitting here was introduced as the researchers and content advisors who are assisting the committee. And as the chairperson, I do exercise my discretion as to when I want clarity on some of the matters that is raised. I want to re-emphasize. Order, Honourable Member.
That's for the whole committee or for you only?
No, it's a content advisor for the committee.
If you want the source information, they can sometimes come and deprive us of that.
So, you direct communication to
me,
and I will send it to you.
No problem.
Now, Honourable Malema, I want to repeat the reference to the public protector report that I've made, because it's there in writing. Whether you disagree with what the public protector says or what, it's something else. Then you are reviewing a report.
Are you reviewing a report?
No, I'm disagreeing with your intervention. Because it seeks to suggest that there is evidence found by the public protector. If you read that, there is no way where the public protector says, I found evidence of the bond.
Honourable Member, I referred to the caption as it is there.
Yes.
and refers specifically to the register of financial interests.
Uh-huh.
That is a legal document of Parliament that is there. So that is the reference that it is stated there by the public protector. And whether you want to interpret it in a particular way or not, that's ultimately your right to do so.
Honorable Chair, I'm saying there is nowhere in the report where the public protector says there's evidence of the bond. And I strongly believe that President has misled Parliament, and that intervention would be made at some point to the Ethics and Privilege Committee for proper investigation against the President, because I hold a strong view that the President does not have a bond. And the public protector even goes further to say, I also get an assurance from the legal advisors of the President. Nowhere in the report where she says there was material evidence presented before me of the bond.
Well, we can only read what she says in front of us.
Absolutely.
And not what she does not say.
I don't know if I'm making it easier, but I think what the Honourable Emma is saying, and I agree with that, is this. The public protector says she was brought to her attention that the President declared that he did have a bond in the register of interests. If one declares something in the register of interests, it's you that say, I've got this. It's not being investigated by the office to say, but what you declared, is that actually so? So that's the one point. But she says, the President declared in the register that I've got a bond. But that on itself may not be evidence that the bond exists. The second point, I think, is the third assurance comes from the President's legal team. And one could argue to say that both of those instances are from the President's side. There are no objective proof that it exists. So I think there's a difference in terms of the interpretation of that, but I think that's it.
Could you represent well, Honorable Malin?
Absolutely.
Honorable Maseko?
Thank you very much, Chair. And I think, Chair, you are right, because what I find now, listening, sitting here, from the opposition, it's a suggestion of a review. And if you review the process, it means restarting the investigation, you reopen it. That's what a review does. And we had agreed in the last meeting, we are not reviewing this report because you're not starting an investigation. And also that the 10-point plan is irrelevant. The 10-point plan shows how the departments and officials flouted the process. They were supposed to follow that process, and they did not follow that process. But also, I think we had agreed that the President did not appoint Makai. He had appointed him as Jacob Gelezisa Zuma, doing upgrades for his home state, believing that as a president, I'm now president, I need to upgrade our home state. And because he already has plans, instead of reinventing the wheel, he said, this man, Makanya, has got the plan of the home state. So in whatever upgrades that you're going to do, he can show you where what is, instead of reinventing the wheel. So I think who appointed Makanya is not the president to be the overall and responsible person for the project. The department, when they probably they thought that it was more the better place to fast-track the process. But as to why was Uganda declared a national key point, I'm sure the president did not say, please declare my home state a national key point. He doesn't determine. He said so. He does not determine that. He does not say, please come and declare my home state a national key point so that I can have all these upgrades and stuff like that. And I think the president did not ask for the security average. It is by assumption of office that you qualify for certain security upgrades, whether you're president or minister, deputy minister, or MEC, whatever, or premier. So it is by assumption of that office that the security cluster then determines, which is all that
what is the security intelligence being done and an assessment, then the Department of Public Works then goes in and do that. But I also still want Honorable Malema to confirm that the public protester said that the president is continuing to take the state resources to enrich himself and his family. Because that's what you said. With the issue of the bonds, if the public protector wanted to see the bond, she would have sent every stone to say, I want to see that bond. She was satisfied by the information. She would have asked any code or any stone she would have sent to get to that point. So the information that she got satisfied her that there is a point. Honorable Malema, to know a lot of people's private lives and what they have and what they need. And I don't think that President misled the nation by declaring that there is a point. What Honorable Egubai wanted, they was on page 435, article 10.7.1.1 in relation to the minister and the deputy minister, seen as political interference. So if the minister and deputy minister was seen as interference because they were too close to the process and project, what more of the president? So it means then the president would have more clout to interfere, which we always say political issues must not interfere with administration issues. And I don't know, I don't know if politicians sign checks. Maybe in other parties they do sign checks and stuff like that. And I'm just asking, because if you are the president, you don't sit and write checks and look at the invoices and all. There are people who are in there who are doing that.
So, honourable members, let's put this dialogue. You know, these days, I want to remind you, these days people don't use checks anymore anyway. It's electronic transfers.
Page 345, 7.31.9.1. So the public assumes that after he has spoken to Dr. Lewis informs the president of the investigation. It's an assumption. Says, I spoke to Dr. Lewis at a meeting, and would have assumed that he had briefed the president. So I don't think it was an assumption. But lastly, Chair, I think this committee has got an even bigger responsibility. And of course that probably we don't think that we will be helping processes, policies, and establishment probably of a better watertight ministerial handbook, if it's ministerial handbook, or whatever issues and process that needs to be followed to the T when they deal with issues, for instance, of the security upgrade. So, as this committee, we have even bigger responsibility to help the public administration to ensure that issues that could open to any sort of corruption are dealt with and closed those gates. Thank you, sir.
Honourable Shabambu.
Thank you, Chair. If you check on page 425, the last paragraph, in terms of the provisions of the KwaZulu-Natal Ingonyama Trust Act of 1994, the KwaZulu-Natal Ingonyama Trust Board required the written consent of the relevant tribunal authority committee before it could enter into a lease agreement with the Department of Public Works. And according to the evidence, the requisite legal process to regulate building on trust land was not concluded. So there wasn't even an agreement. I don't know how a bond could have been given on a land where there was not even an agreement on building any structure there. So it supplements the argument that there is no bond. Parliament was misled. We'll engage obviously in a separate process to illustrate that Parliament was misled in terms of the declaration of the president that he has a bond with regards to even the basic things that had to be dealt with the people who own the land has not been fulfilled to deal with those issues. But then the issue which is of concern is that the ANC is not saying anything. Like, we can't hear what you're saying. You're talking and repeating each other and using different phrases. There is a concrete proposal that I think is coming from this side. And I can summarize it as follows that. Number one is that we should not view the court of the public protector, and we should make sure that it is implemented to the fullest. All the remedial actions that are proposed in page 442 should be implemented as they are. That is what we are saying. That the SIU report must be more than the officials that are identified as having been responsible for some of the actions should be held accountable through the process that already has commenced. Can't do anything about it anyway. And the third component of what we are proposing concretely is that because there are still unanswered questions by the president, he comes to the committee to respond to some of the questions that could not be answered through the FIU process and through the public protector process. And calling the president here is not inconsistent with the report, because the last remedial action which the public protector proposes says that the president should report to the National Assembly on his comments and actions on the report, because they are supposed to be within 14 days. It's many months now. So those are the concrete things. Can we get a counter proposal, okay, if there is any, so that we know what we're speaking on and round and about, it's another debate that we're just going to keep on there, I don't know for how long. There's a concrete issue on the table that let's have the president to come and answer all the another questions. Let's make sure that the remedial actions proposed by the, actually prescribed by the public protector are implemented. The SIU interventions and actions that are already in place must be endorsed to continue the disciplinary actions and all the other things that have been dealt with. That is a concrete proposal that we're giving. But the ANC is all over the head. Speaking, they want to draw out into pencils which are moving from 10 rand to 25 rand, PCMA and all these other things. There's a proposal. What is your proposal? And how to move forward? Because we can't be here forever. We've got the counter to run things.
Honorable, I'll come back to you. There's been a few other ends. We'll get to that question very, very soon that the Honorable Chivambu has set up. The Honorable Naimani also has his hand up. It also followed by the Honorable Tlakmulder, Honorable Tlakude, the Honorable Gardi, and then the Honorable Macheka will be the last one. Honorable Fell, by Fokortium. No. My apologies. You should follow after the Honorable Gadi. My apologies.
Thank you, sir. You know, I feel like I don't want us to get into a stuck record type of mode where we made a proposal and there's a whole lot of discussion that takes place. I want to crystallize it, to simply say there are a few people that need to be here. And I take great exception to the Honorable Kuvai arguing the case that there's no way we need people to come and appear here. This is an obvious principle, is that there are unanswered questions on every report that is considered, and they all point to one person. President Zuma answered the following question. You have failed to do so. If I don't ask that that takes place, I'm failing the taxpayer, and I'm failing this particular committee. It can't be. So I'd like to propose that, in fact, we get President Zuma here. That if we like, we can get Advocate Vassolu, who's the author of the SIU report, get the public protector here for that report that we're dealing with. And as an outcome of that, we can get perhaps the Minister of the Public Works who are involved in the project, in fact, Jeff Deutsch and Gwen Mashangu. I think that list must be there. We mustn't be getting ourselves stuck into a process of now eventually we want the clerk who handles this particular paper, etc. I think there are political principles we're here that we need to hold to account. I think that would be that. It then would be key
that post that we're able to synthesize. We've had from all the respective inputs. Here's the synthesis of the report that this committee can be able to say. But we can be able to say one of our key recommendations, starting with first and foremost, that the public protector's report must be dead to in terms of its remedial action. Here are some of the preventative steps that must take place. So ultimately, the same plan is not the prosecutorial work of President Zuma. It's about making sure at the end of the day that not another President Zuma arrives. Because in future, another president can simply say, well, in knowing that I'm going to become president in a few months, I'm going to procure, whether by a bond or not bond, a small holding farm in a rural community and put a tent there, and then tell the state, come and secure me here. We've got to prevent that sort of practice, because the Public Protector Report uses words like it was licensed to loot. I don't know how do we misinterpret the word loot. In my view, it could be licensed to steal. It's taxpayers' money that was stolen. So in this instance, we must talk about how do we prevent that particular process from taking place. So this is not an investigation. This is the duty of the particular committee to be able to do the work of Parliament, which is to safeguard future processes such as this from taking place. I also want to say, when dealing with President Zuma, I'm amazed when people say the President does not sign checks. And nobody's here to argue that the President signs checks. But you can't use the same argument to simply then say the President is not responsible for anything. You can't simply say that. Then that would mean any political principle should never, ever be taking the responsibility. Corruption takes place, it's irrelevant, because that person never signed checks, never entered into contact. I find that logic, that process, completely flawed and very dangerous. Because all it means is that exactly the example I used earlier on, if a plane lands in Waterkloof, it's never the fault of anybody. It's just the official who was there. So I think at the rate we are going, we must suspend politicians, because we certainly are making the assumption that the official must be the one who must take the principle. But I want to highlight the contradictions here. President Zuma arrives here, and in answer to the question, did you know about this? This was his response. All the buildings and every room we used in that residence was built by ourselves and our family and not by government. Yeah, he then further says that I've never asked government to build a home for me, and it has not done so. The government has not built a home for me. What is the response to Parliament? Furthermore, he then proceeds to say, I told government that I had my own plan, which was a comprehensive plan, to extend my home. What then happened was that I allowed government to meet with the contractors who were already on site. These are the president's own words. I allowed them to meet with the people. That's for humans to say, he went, and from a security view, insisted that they needed to participate. So, it is clear to me that we are dealing with two things. Whether the president is misleading or not, I don't know. I can only decide that when I get to ask him the question personally. Say, President Zuma, you said the state did not build the house for you. The public protector argued that particular point. Here are the main security upgrades that were put. Here of those security upgrades pertain to building some of the houses that were on site. Can you clarify the distinction for me? I'm not checking or contradicting the report. I'm simply saying from one report to your own statement, it doesn't seem to make sense. President Zuma, you said even the issue about the bond, we can't settle it here. We must have the right to ask the president directly. Even the issue of asking the president, well, what does it mean when you say you introduce people? When you say this one connected to this one and this one became principal project manager, what do you mean by that? So I think it's actually, I find that we can't keep going backwards and forwards. We've got the report in front of us. Honorable Matana has said the statement over and over again. We can read. We have read them. The proposal is simple. Let's agree today who are the people that are going to come, when are they going to come, so that we can then begin to take the committee forward. But we're going to read ever again, so that we keep going through this particular process. I think we'll discover in a month's time when this committee, or in less than a month's time when this committee is to conclude its work, that we haven't achieved that. I would argue the case and urge the members sitting in this room that in fact, we've done the work of synthesis. Let's get all the players here so that we can do that work. Let's ensure that we make clear about who we want to get here, so that ultimately we can get the process of accountability on the go. I think I'm comfortable enough to say there's some consensus on at least that we must call people here, and then we must just decide here today in Shepherdson who those people are. But this extended sense of we've established, we can't even be debating who knew what and who didn't know what. We've established that. Let's bring the president here so that he can explain to us what exactly he knew and why there are some things that contradict his statement that's already made in the House in Palace. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honourable Mulder.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I would like to return to one of the arguments put forward by the Honourable Kubayi. She made a point in her earlier intervention that we must be very careful in terms of what we do, and she warned that the president may take his own remedial action, I guess, against the committee of parliament. And if so, I'm not concerned about that because I think we as the committee and parliament have the ace of spades in our hand. It's called the Constitution. Section 55. We are supposed to do oversight of the executive. And it's not something that we decided, well, maybe we should do that. We've got two of the most comprehensive reports in the existence of the democracy in the last 20 years in front of us. We have done a huge amount of work and put all of that on the table. All that we now need to do is to fulfill our constitutional role. Now, not only all the press has suggested, and it's been suggested by some of the other members from the ruling party as well, that the 10-point plan seems to be the answer. We cannot follow the 10-point plan, because the 10-point plan would say, this should have been done, it was not done, so it's wrong. And then we can speculate, why did it go wrong? Why was this not followed? How do we get around that problem? By calling the responsible persons and ask them, why did you not follow the instructions of the Act? But Honourable Kubayi argues, she's very happy, we should call no one. Now I'm saying to this committee, if this committee decides that we do not need to call anyone, regardless of fact, it's common knowledge that 18 of the 29 questions put by the Public Protector was not answered, that the majority of the 15 questions put by the Special Investigative Unit were not answered. If this committee decides we don't need to call anyone, I can make no other inference than we become part of a cover-up. I'm sorry to say that. But the president thought it was a good idea to undermine these institutions and to not cooperate. If this committee decides to play along with that same strategy, we become complicit in that kind of approach. We undermine the Constitution. We are not fulfilling our role. Go and have a look at what Section 55 says. Our honourable colleague at the back, Suzanne, pardon that I refer to you in that such a way, argues on behalf of the Public Protector and says, well, she thinks that the Public Protector is quite satisfied with regard to the bond. It's not so. Not because I say so, because the Public Protector says so. Go and have a look at page 281 of the Public Protector's report. It starts on 280 at the bottom. The Public Protector said, I indicated to myself later to the President that the concern raised by the complainant is the impression that you might have violated the provisions of the Executive Ethics Code by misleading Parliament when you say you got a bond. I also referred you to the public statement of the President on 20 November 2012 that the information pertaining to your bond, in the statement of the President, would be made available to, quote, an authorized agency or institution empowered by the law of the land. End of quote. Then Public Protector says, you will respectfully agree with me that this includes the Public Protector. Yes, it does. And did the President do that? No, he didn't do that. Then she goes on, two paragraphs later. I accordingly wish to appeal to you to provide me with the relevant documents pertaining to the bond that you refer to. The information contained in these documents will be handled discreetly as related to your private affairs. All I really need to verify in this regard is that the bond exists. And it relates to your private residence at Nkansa. So the President, the Public Protector, is clearly not happy with the fact that she is now being accommodated. The other colleague makes this other point to say that if we now want to ask these questions that were never answered, we want to review the Public Protector's report. No, we don't want to review the Public Protector's report, but you know what?
some colleagues are shy away from the public protector's report. Look at all the evidence. The public protector treated the president with gloves. She was very soft. Very, very soft on the president. The remedial action consists of 4 points to the president. Only 4 things. Reprimand the ministers. How difficult can that be? Cooperate with those two departments and calculate how much you owe and repay that. The public protector could have found, Mr. President, you're in violation of the Constitution because you're not cooperating with the public protector in terms of Chapter 9 of the Constitution. You undermine the Constitution. She didn't do that. So when I want to call for further evidence, it's to fulfill the role of Parliament to keep the executive to account. We should go beyond even the public protector's report. The public protector's report is not up for discussion. It's a fact. It's not something out there that we can discuss. Maybe these are recommendations. They're not recommendations. The Constitution is clear. Those things need to be implemented, and we can discuss how you can implement them. But that is a directive of our role? I don't think so. If we are serious about our role in terms of oversight, we would go beyond even that. So, Chairperson, with all due respect to my colleagues, we cannot do what we are supposed to do. We are not doing our duty if we think we cannot call people. There's a clear proposal from Mr. Raymond and some of the other colleagues. Let's sit down and draw up the list and get people to answer. At the first meeting of this committee, I argued to all our colleagues around this table, we should not underestimate the importance of this process. It has become quite clear. It's not a question of the public protector versus the president. It goes way beyond that. This is about accountability. It's about the role of Parliament. It's about the role of the executive. It's about accepting your responsibility as the executive for things that happen during your watch. So, with all due respect, if this committee fails in this respect, how do we expect anyone ever again to take Parliament seriously or to take any oversight seriously? Why should an official of any department say, I'm prepared to be questioned by Parliament and I take my responsibility seriously? The President didn't do so. Some of the colleagues across the floor are quite happy that it's all the way. Nobody has to come and account. Nobody. We are quite satisfied that the majority of questions were never answered. We cannot implement the 10-point plan. Why not? Because we don't know. The officials clearly did not do what the Act says. Why did they do so? We don't know. We want to find out why they didn't do so. No, we don't want to know. Is that what we want to recommend to the House? This is a very serious matter. If we fail in our duty, don't expect anyone to come and account again to this Parliament.
The Honourable Lacroix.
Point of order. What I'm trying to understand, Chairperson, is are you going to, if you could clarify it for me, are you going to call for all the inputs and then we're going to make a decision? Or are we going to allow the proposal that is sitting on the table to simply just hang? I'm not sure what the process is.
Honourable, just be patient. We're getting to that point now. I indicated the list of speakers.
Okay.
And I said the Honourable Chesa is the last speaker.
Okay.
So that we can then consider the matter.
Thank you.
Honourable Lacroix.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to draw the attention of my colleagues to page 286 of the public protector's report, where the cumulative evidence indicated that from the time that the Nkanda project commenced, the procurement procedures followed were different from the norm and failed to comply with the prescribed standards of proper demand management and budgeting. The officials involved clearly saw that due to the fact that the Nkanda project related to the security of the president, which was why it was regarded as urgent, and as it was driven from the DPWN office and the Ministry of Public Works, the deviation from norms was justified and not to be questioned. That is what Mr. Kanyile is saying. Then, following the statement by Kanyile in his response to the evidence and information obtained during the investigation are of particular significance in this regard. What was abnormal is that head office was running the project directly, interfering with the duties of the project manager and region,
and regional manager at the Durban regional office. DG being accounting officer was directly involved in operational issues of the project by coming to site, met the professionals, the project manager, and gave instructions that were contrary to policies of the state. The minister, being political head of the department, was supervising the project every 2 weeks, chairing the project site meetings, giving, yes, you can read up to there. Hence, we are saying that we understand that according to the reports, all of them, there was serious looting of state funds during this project. That is why we are saying no report is superior to the other. All the recommendations that are in this report, all the findings of the report, one way or the other, agree with each other. What we are saying as the ANC is that our role as this committee is to consider all these reports, that's number one, make our own recommendations as this committee to Parliament and table the reports on the expected date. What we are not going to agree upon is to call people to come before this Parliament. Reason being that we are not opening an investigation. Investigations have been done by the people relevant, including the public protector. So ours is to continue with the deliberations on the report, have where there were flaws or loopholes, come up with a recommendation to Parliament so that this kind of thing doesn't happen in future. That is what we need to do. So we all know that the SRU has already started a process of charging criminally people and all sorts of those things. So we cannot argue on that matter. So it seems we are going somewhere. I just wanted to remind you, may not agree with me, Honorable Maimane. I don't expect you to. But what I'm saying is our position that this is what we are going to do. Amen. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Gani. Honorable Chairman, at page 426 of the Public Protector's Report, paragraph 9.6.2.1, clearly states that this report is in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act. What it means is that this committee was not established because there is an SIU report, because there is an Inkandla scandal, or because there is an interministerial document or whatever. This committee was established because, in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act, the complaint was received by the public protector, flown from the public protector's act and the Executive Members Ethics Act, she performed this investigation and reported as such to Parliament, and accordingly this committee was established. And this committee shall plagiarize her report and all other reports shall be subsidiary. Anything beyond what is said in page 426 is unconstitutional. And this committee and majority members must not actually bring us into an unconstitutional conduct. Secondly, that the president did not know, I think it's naivety at this best. Have we so soon forgotten the doctrine of the duty of care? The oath and the constitution obliges the president to perform and exercise his duties in consideration of the doctrine of duty of care. And accordingly, his ignorance cannot be an excuse. Like the speaker said, the president has lost it. It's out there in the open. He cannot deny it. The issue of introduction of the architect can be equated to what is called improper relationship
when a lady or when a spouse goes to a lawyer and says, my dear lawyer, I want to divorce. Must say, I've got 20 million, then help me my divorce to be successful. When the lawyer now advances on an improper relationship with that woman, most certainly she will agree, because anyway, she thinks that men will, the lawyer will perform so very well in the court to get a share of the 20 million rand. Just like when an accused is advanced upon by a policeman, or a patient being approached by a doctor. Here you have got a very junior staff who is summoned by the president to introduce an architect. What do you expect of the poor public servant who is not actually deployed, is not a killer that has been deployed? The president is such an honest person who doesn't have a clue. He did not only disclose what he, my honorable colleague, has said. On the 5th of May 2014, the president has got the gas to tell the international world, it's reported in the by the newspaper of the UK. If he cannot disclose a mere PTO permission to occupy paper of Nkata, but he has got the gas to tell the world that the security upgrade was very proper because his wife was raped. Humiliating your wife, raping, getting her to be raped for the 10th time because you are visiting the world. If you can tell the world that my wife was raped, but you can't produce a paper to say, I've got a bond. You say, look at the Hansard of Parliament. Hansard of Parliament are not a copy of a bond. That's what you say here. What's your take on this idea? The president is in contempt of the Constitution. In fact, should this committee fail to exercise its oversight duty? There are NGOs out there. One NGO called Freedom Under Law and many others have managed to approach the Constitutional Court and declare the process of this committee a farce. And the Constitutional Court will hold as such. And we will be embarrassed as members of Parliament that from time to time we are forced into order by the judiciary. This ingenuity of the president knows no bounds really. He only likes playing the victim card. Accordingly, we need to agree with the suggestion that we come to the conclusion and say the public protector is an author of a document that led to the existence of this committee. This committee did not exist because of a document ordered by SIU. Accordingly, she is the prime candidate to be number one here in the committee. And then probably, or most probably, certainly so, the president and, of course, the authors of SIU and the rest, as mentioned by Honorable Laiman. But really, the public protector should come and clarify certain why didn't her questions get answered? What did she do about it? As the president, the public protector was here yesterday. She said this and this was your issue here, etc. And then we move on. If we feel like calling the order of SIU, so we shall, but we are not bound. It's unconstitutional what the ANC members are here pushing us to do. Because this committee was not established on the basis of an SIU report, but on the basis of executive members. Thank you, Chairperson.
The Honourable Self.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must confess that I suffer from a profound feeling of deja vu because with the exception of yourself and myself and the Honourable Order, we could have taken ourselves back to the previous ad hoc committee in the 4th Parliament. Because what is going on here is very clear. Is that there is a concerted effort now to shut down the reach of this committee, and that is a very serious business. Because if I listen to the Honourable Clark Kude, she says, our role is to consider the reports, to make recommendations and table them in Parliament. We are not opening any further investigation or having any witnesses. We have to check where there were flaws, and we had to table a report accordingly in the National Assembly. That's as I understood what she said. That, Chairperson, is a profound failure of the constitutional responsibilities of Parliament as are envisaged in Section 55 of the Constitution. Section 55 is very clear. It says that the National Assembly must provide mechanisms to ensure that the executive organs of state in the national sphere of government are accountable to it, Parliament. Now, if we simply take note of the report, make some random recommendations, we will be no clearer down the road of holding the executive accountable. There was systematic looting. It happened by the executive. We need to satisfy ourselves that the unanswered questions that were contained in the reports of the public protector and of the SIU are in fact satisfactorily answered, and that would not be reopening the investigation, that would simply be augmenting the knowledge that we have at the moment in terms of the report and drawing the investigation to a conclusion. But if we simply just paper over the cracks, pretend it didn't happen, say that it was all an unfortunate mistake or that it was the responsibility of some minor clerk in some government department in Durban, then we will have profoundly failed our responsibility in the most abject way. And I really would appeal to my colleagues opposite to take their constitutional responsibility seriously and to address the unanswered questions that are contained in this report. Otherwise, you make Parliament into a farce.
Honourable Chairman.
I think we must commend you for affording all of us an opportunity to exhaust all the input we had and to make a proposal, and even giving other people two bites, and not all of us the same two bites. That's commendable. When people say that there was a tacit acceptance for the implementation of remediation, I can't understand that, because if there is a tacit acceptance, how does a person who is tacitly accepted come back and say the minister of police must go and determine how much, if any amount, is due by me? And also we need to bear in mind that the responsibility that people think was wrongly given to the minister is the responsibility that the minister, as the originator, had at the beginning of the process, and that responsibility was not discharged. So it is not giving the minister a power that he did not have. It is the power that he had as originator at the beginning of the process, but that power was not exercised. But I think also in his correspondence, the president makes a point which is consistent with the rules of natural justice, that I cannot be a judge in my own cause. Why should one ask the president to find himself guilty and sentence himself and jail himself? Because the process requires the determination of whether or not he shares responsibility. If he does, how much he has to pay, if any amount he has to pay. So that process is underway. That process is underway. And therefore, we should not interfere with that process and shift a responsibility to the person who doesn't have that responsibility.
but also with due respect, to say there is remedial action, let it be fully implemented. And to say that this remedial action is mandatory or is binding, the question remains open. Whether this remedial action is peremptory, that is advisory, or mandatory, that is binding. And the Supreme Court of Appeals has not addressed itself, spoken on that matter. It only spoke on the expansion of the powers of the public protector in as far as this was allows for action by the public protector. So that question has not been settled. And now, which means remedial action is in dispute. Now, if it's in dispute, how do you then say people who are disputing that remedial action as binding should accept it? Because you are honorable members, the question here is, there is remedial action. Another Jew says it is binding. Another Jew says it is not binding. So if you are given such a situation, how do we, as this committee, ignore the fact that there are two points of view and that even the courts have not expressed themselves on that question, but the balance of evidence, by academics and by practice in this parliament, is that this remedial action has the status of a recommendation, and therefore, it is for us at the end of this engagement to decide what do we do with this situation where the balance of evidence points in the other direction. And there was something like conscientiously bound and so on in law. Law is about certainty. In law, we talk about the standard of a reasonable person, not the standard of a conscientious person. Because conscientious introduces, as honorable Kobay says, morality and other things, and we don't know which morality it is. But the standard in law is reasonableness, not conscientiousness. You see, also, there was this thing that if he shares responsibility, the only question is what for and how much he must pay. But we are saying the Minister of Police is seized with that matter. We can't preempt that aspect. We must allow the, his process to run to a conclusion. You know, Honorable, seeing there about this remedial action, we have several reports before us. We can say one report is takes priority, other reports are subsidiary. What we can say is that we have this report between us, before us, but these reports are not at one as to the meaning of remedial action. So we, after full engagement, we have to decide that question ourselves at this parliament. But there has been a lot of things said about whether the president knew or didn't know. You know, in law, when we say you know, we don't refer to hearsay knowledge. We don't refer to newspaper knowledge, media knowledge. In law, when we say, tell us whether you know or not, you have to say, I have personal knowledge. So we're talking about personal knowledge. No, we can't say that the president had personal knowledge of matters that he saw in the media. We can't say that. So personal knowledge here means personal knowledge, and we can't say the president had personal knowledge because of his paper reports. There's also this question of Honorable Mulder talking about omissions by the president. You see, we must be careful not to individualize things. We're talking about the executive. In the executive, there is individual responsibility and collective responsibility. Now, the president, as head of the executive, has appointed ministers to be responsible to certain areas of work. Now, the president has to wait for his ministers to report to him or to report to the collective cabinet as to what is happening. But if somebody complains about malpractice somewhere, maladministration in an area where the president has appointed a minister, I will say the president must run and start doing live function and ignore that minister. I think we are misinterpreting the constitution and the responsibilities of the president. And sometimes also I don't seem to accept that certain responsibilities are government responsibilities. For instance, we're talking about a cluster. Cluster is a collective of ministers. Should the president replace a collective of ministers that reports to cabinet? The president must wait for that cluster to bring a report to cabinet. But I sense that there is a concerted action here to isolate the president from his cabinet and then deal with him as an individual. And that's why people resist the 10-point plan, which is the only plan for us, which gives us an opportunity to deal with matters systematically and not to jump from one area to another area. And to suggest with due respect that the president has not answered 18 questions. If you ask a person to ask questions on things that would not fall in the personal knowledge of that person, because that person is not dealing with those matters, then that would be unreasonable. There is a suggestion that Rule 1338 gives us the power to call people. It's true. Nobody challenges that. But we said from the outset that we have a duty here to establish the need whether or not any person should be called. And with due respect, no need was established here. In fact, what happened is that the demand which was made even before this committee was constituted was just repeated that let the president be here, let the public protector be here. I think the public protector has produced a very good report. It doesn't need any supplementary evidence. So what should she be coming here to appreciate? She has done her work and we respect that support. That's why we don't even want to review that support. But out of all my man, with respect, you are operating on a very wrong assumption that we have a president who is a principal agent here because he appointed a principal contractor, which is Makari. That is very faulty because there's no evidence to that effect. The only evidence we have is that the president introduced Makaya to the other people because Makaya was already working on site. There was a need for synchronization. So introduction and appointment is not the same thing. So you really misunderstood the whole situation. And I want to repeat that you were saying this committee must decide what is the status of the remedial action. The status is that the remedial action is in dispute, others say it's binding,
other things is not. So how can this committee, when that dispute that is not resolved, this committee taking position and carry on another? We have to deal with that matter. Let's deal with this question about the bond. I think the honourable members who raised the issue about the existence or non-existence of the bond and take the view that it does not exist is simply because they don't believe that it exists. And non-belief is not a fact. And I think you yourself correctly said that matter must be dealt with elsewhere. Because here we can't fabricate evidence. We are relying on the declaration of interest. So why should we discuss something when all of us don't have the information? So you are right to say, let's deal with that matter elsewhere. There is a suggestion that how do we take the matter forward? I think the Honourable would have able to deal with that matter because we have reports that are well written, that are comprehensive, which make recommendations. Our task is to consider all the recommendations. There's not a recommendation which is similar to other recommendations, and then come to our own recommendations to the House. Lastly, Honourable Mainana, your fear that future presidents will go and look for a place in the rural areas, put a tent and put government resources there is unfounded. Is unfounded because Nkanda is an ancestral home of the president. When he went to prison, when he went into exile, his home has been there. So he has not started a new home. So there's no basis really to even make a suggestion. And I want to agree with the Honorable Kabude that we don't need to call anybody. She summarized that well, but to reinforce that summary, I guess that because honorable members were saying there's nothing coming from our side. We are saying the committee will consider all reports, and we are busy doing that. The committee will deliberate on the content and make recommendations. We are busy with that. The committee can't open a second round of investigation. And by calling anybody to come before this committee, it would mean we are reviewing or opening an investigation. And that's not what we are here to do. So we don't need any witnesses. We have sufficient information to move forward.
Honourable members, the Honourable Mane earlier asked how far are we going with this discussion. Now, Honourable, just give me a minute. The Honourable Singh has also indicated, even before the Honourable Mocheha made his input, I really want to get to the point now that we decide how to move forward, because clearly there's two different views that are emerging, and there is no consensus on the matter of calling any specific witness or witnesses or people to anything, as well as the different interpretation around the disturbing the election in the report of the public protector. So those are the two issues that have clearly emerged. We have clearly allowed at length sufficient time for inputs as far as the two issues are concerned. There was a clear question as to what is the other side saying, and they have responded now. So I want to conclude. I'm just going to give very briefly on the person you an opportunity and the Honourable Malema an opportunity. So we've already gone way past the time that has been allocated for this evening, for this meeting, and then we will have to close the meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, we'll get there.
Honourable Mocheha has himself admitted the dispute on the roads.
and what the remedial action means. Well, to me and to my party, it's not recommendations, it's an injunction. An injunction that we have to, we are obliged to follow in terms of the Constitution. Now, we have precedences for 20 years in this Parliament with other Chapter 9 institutions. Office of the Auditor General. What happens? The Auditor General has to make finding and give an opinion on the financial statements of departments, state-owned advisors. He affords the departments to come up with their responses, managerial responses, and then tables a report to Parliament. After the report is tabled in Parliament, then SCOPA then looks at the report, and departments have to respond to the reports of a Chapter 9 institution, the Office of Auditor General. And for SCOPA and other committees to consider the report, they invite the Office of the Auditor General to speak to the report. They invite the head of department, the Auditor General, and in recent times we invite the minister to speak to the report. The committee then comes up with recommendations which it takes to Parliament. After considering all of this, oral evidence, the report of the Auditor General, why are we not following the same process here? Because similar kind of Chapter 9 institutions involved. Why are we trying to bypass this question of inviting people here to clarify their positions? Not to review the report, but to clarify. We would strongly contend that persons need to be invited to this committee if we need to do justice for the work of this committee to clarify their thoughts around the service.
Well, thank you. I think that I don't think we're listening to each other, because if we read the report of us, Honorable Matole, the President says he got the personal knowledge, was briefed from time to time. We're not only relying on the media reports. So if you want to bring the legalities of what is personal knowledge, the President is not in dispute saying he has been briefed both formally and informally. But if there is a contradiction about that, that is one reason enough to call the President and let's hear from him. Did he know these things and all the unanswered questions? We are not isolating the President, Honorable Matole. It is the public protector. There is no way where the public protector says there must be a determination of sharing of responsibility and who must pay or who must not pay. I mean, if you look at page 442, it's very clear. The first paragraph instructs the President to work with the Treasury and staff to determine how much he, and he alone, not he and other people. So there's no isolation of the President. But let me reassure you, if you want to amend the remedial actions of the public protector, we're going to leave this committee and we'll meet in court. We'll take you to court and let the courts announce or pronounce on this matter. We are not going to legitimize plagiarism where people want to undermine the constitutional structure in the form of public protector's office through this process. You want us to sit in a meeting and you are being dishonest. You said to us, we are not going to amend the public protector's report. Now we are being told that we must come up with new recommendations and remedial actions by the public protector are not binding. If that is going to be the way forward of this committee, you must know that we are not longer going to participate in this committee. The best possible option where the powers of the public protector can be interpreted in the constitutional court. Then we meet in court. We are not going to be bullied here by the ANC, which does everything in its power to protect President Zuma. Recommendations are very clear here. We are here to take these recommendations forward, and not only limit ourselves to these recommendations, to also come up with other effective accounting mechanisms as indicated in the Constitution. Other accounting mechanism of how do we continue to hold the executive accountable. When we call people, even if we were to arrive at a conclusion that
President Zuma must be prosecuted. It's not a review of public protector record. We implement this and go beyond. We're not reversing this. So any suggestion, and we are not going to even want to vote about that, shall we say. That will be legal. This committee sits here today on the basis of this report. SIU report and all the reports you are referring to, for me, they don't enjoy the same status. This report, there was an ad hoc committee on Uganda in the first parliament without an SIU report, necessitated by public protectors report. And we are just continuing with that work in the fifth parliament. Now, taking advantage that there are latest reports on the same matter. But this is not equal to SIU report. Even the SIU report, we have no power to say you can't charge this one, you can charge this one, and all those type of things. Ours is to add on the list of the SIU. If there's someone who's left out, we can add on that. So, Chair, anything that suggests we change this is unconstitutional. We are not willing to legitimize such a process, and therefore we're going to pull out of this process, and then we'll meet in court.
Honourable members, I've given the two members. I just want to give Honourable goodbye.
You're changing your own rule,
honorable,
and I find that unfair.
Honourable members,
just relax.
Honourable member, you see, you asked, is there any, what are we going to do after the Honourable check? And you agreed. There was agreement that there was extra points that was invited, and I said that we will be brief. So there are views that have emerged.
No, it's
an opportunity on my mind. Right? I can't see any harm that will be done to give the Honourable Chair an opportunity to say, and then the decision is taken as to how we proceed. Clearly, we've been sitting here for 9 hours, waiting for a few more minutes. It's not going to do any additional harm.
Well,
and in which way will that, is that unfair and counter to the process that we're engaging in? I allow very liberally, I must say, opportunity for members of the committee to engage. So I decided that I will give the Honourable Member an opportunity, and thereafter you can come and you can issue or reaffirm your proposal that you've made earlier.
Well, I just wanted to be clear that if you are then going to adjust your own original agreement that we made to say you want to give more members the opportunity, I think that should be open and I'd like to welcome one.
Honourable Kubai?
Thanks, Chairperson. I think one of the things that we need to really, we can leave unchallenged when people are being us dishonest. It's really, really unfair. It can't be that people must say it's their way or the highway. It doesn't work like that in this life. People must be able to listen to the other view. If you do not agree with it, you don't agree with it. And you are entitled to disagree with individuals or even people. And at this point, Chair, we definitely do not agree with that, and I still maintain that I do not see any reason why anyone should be called here. And I think the Constitution is very clear. And I think that, you see, we can't be threatened to being able to engage. We are here to engage as members of this committee. Sounds like when somebody does not get their way and throws their toys, you see, and threaten us, it's just inappropriate. It's really just inappropriate. The issue is that we are engaging, and if I'm saying I'm not convinced, Chairperson, people must put the argument through. I'm still not convinced because I feel that the issues that have been thrown here and how is it, I still feel that if you are to call people here, they dispute what is being put through, we will be reading the public protector's report. We are not in support of the rule. We must not be misquoted deliberately, Chairperson. It's mischievous to say that the African National Congress wants to review the public protector's report. That's really, really mischievous. Secondly, Chairperson, is that, you see, as well, I think I just want to address the issue of don't call us names if you disagree with us. And they would, that's childish. So, you must disagree with us on point. Don't label us. There are issues that you are putting on the table. There are issues that you are challenging.
And if you will disagree with us, let us disagree with us on the point. We are sticking on the proposal that we have. I will just be in
Honourable Malema, Mr. Chairperson, I mentioned it early in the meeting and you're repeating the same mistake now.
Chairperson, my apologies. I think number 7 must allow me to speak. Every time I speak, they jump. My issue here is that this proposal that has been tabled by the Deputy Chief, seconded by Dr. Motsega. I don't understand the confusion. We are very clear. We do not support the point of calling people here. There are issues because that's the argument we are putting. You call people here, they say that I do not agree with paragraph, I do not agree. You can't say when a person is here, if I say no, you are going to only answer this. But people will say no, but I'm not going to in the court. What do you do? So it can be chosen that it's just narrowed. And in our narrow view, we must consider it. It's not going to happen. It's not realistic. It's not realistic at all. If it happens and we keep on doing this, I'm not sure what is the key here.
Just
disrespect for other views and disrespect for other views. I mean, it needs to be tolerated. So the issue here, Chairperson, is that we are very clear in terms of where our proposal is. You can't want to be narrowing to say, no, we're going to call this one here, and this is what we're going to ask. I'm saying, the person will say, our life, I have a substantive report to table because I feel that the PP has misrepresented me, or I feel that the SIU has misrepresented me. What do we do? That's the issue here. That's why our proposal is we're not going to call, we don't want to call anyone here. Let's look at the issue here. Proposal is to say, okay, the minister must table that, and as mentioned earlier, minister must give it to Parliament as the accounting, as the institution that they account to, so that we are able to monitor the work and what has been happening. We'll come to other recommendations and other things we want to see, sir.
See, now there's more hands going up. You see, and what is going to happen is, honourable members, as we do this, we are not really advancing any new arguments. There's two proposals that are essentially there. And the first proposal was made by Honorable Mamai, and it was seconded. And then the ANC made a second proposal, which is also on the table, and that's where we are. Now, I don't know the men who are putting up their hands now if they have other proposals that they wish to make. Honorable Shivan?
No. Chair, well, let's put on record that when we started the meeting, even Honorable Zeha did say that there's unanimity in the committee that we're not going to change and we're not going to review the public protector's report. But now the recommendation of the ANC basically says that we should change the remedial action of the public protector. That is dishonesty. That is dishonesty. There's no any other way to characterize dishonesty. And in terms of this process, because we're operating all of us under the premise that we're not going to change the public protector's remedial action. But now the recommendations of the ANC is that now we must ignore those, what they call them recommendations of the public protector, we must make our own recommendations. And that was the National Assembly only required to date. And we really can't be invited into such unconstitutional space and action. Can't be part of violating the constitution. We really can't be part of that that process. And it's basically that. I mean, like, we understand the position of the ANC that the president was not coming there on the podium because the present past ANC did say that they don't want the president to come and account to Parliament. So it's one of those things. We take note of all those things, but it's beginning to expose the approach to Parliament. Even a basic issue that a president must be held accountable, he can't come and be accountable. It's beginning of a dictatorship of people who do things and do not want to be held accountable in terms of how we move forward. But there is really dishonesty in terms of how we do these issues. And
will handle it in a different platform.
You know, I've been unfair to one of my life. I thought I was going to give him the last opportunity, but subsequently there were two ways that went up. I'll give it to you now.
Jefferson, I want to draw parallels of a different process. The court order that President Zuma has been fighting on the spy tapes. If I look at that process of the spy tapes, I want to highlight the genius, if you like, behind President Zuma. He has used legal resources by the taxpayer to appeal that matter for months on end. Because in his view, even a court decision must be appealed to the next one, etc. Now here, there's a public protector's report, and the modus operandi is no different. It says, in his communication to the public protector, no, your decision is not reviewable by a court, and in fact, I will table another report that contradicts exactly that. Because whatever you report is tabled by the presidency to this house, is the issue here. Because FIU is accountable to the executive. I appeal that we mustn't fall to this particular trap of an experienced person in delaying processes of the law and processes of the constitution. That's the invitation that we will accept if we take the view that says, let's continue. We have learned the lesson, but that here we know what happens in one form of litigation. Now you are asking us to go into another. I highlight that there's communication between the president and the public protector. The president holds this view. This is the president's view. It's not secret. He says the public protector's decision cannot, he can only be seen as a process of an ombudsman. They can't, he disagrees. I respectfully want to respond back to the president and say, President, we disagree on your view of what the public protector's role is. Now, that's not reviewing anybody's report. That is holding a question of standard in terms of who has authority over what. Therefore, my proposal substantiates to say the fact that will this parliament and this ever committee, by extension, take, which view is it going to take? Is it going to take a constitutional chapter 9 institution view, or is it going to take an executive view? In which case, if we do take the executive view, we might as well concede that we are sweetheart of the executive. So if we go that route, let's accept this upfront and say, and in that instance, that's the first thing. The second question is this. If we as this committee sit here today and we say, fine, the public protector's report, the president does not have to comply with, I also want to put on record that no one ever in this country should ever comply with the report of the public protector. No one should ever do it, because you've already set precedent in place to say public protector makes a pronouncement on one thing, none of us in this country, none of us. If the president is not willing to comply with the remedial action put forward by the public protector, then none of us will. And in fact, all of us must be able to find an alternative view to the public protector and live by that. We cannot do that. It is no debate to say that the 90 questions that Honorable Mulder took us through are not answered. That's not the debate. I don't know why we must enter into a debate about that. There's no debate. Where we may need a constitutional opinion is exactly in this debate about what the Supreme Court of Appeal places in terms of the public protector. I want to put it on record here as a DA. We hold the view that says that the public protector is supreme. Because that's a Chapter 9 constitutional arrangement. I'm not the sweetheart of the executive. I'm the sweetheart of the constitution. I can't be divorced from that. I accept that there must be other processes. And then finally, we have a choice as this committee. Whether we are going to portray to an individual with experience a delayed litigation. We are going to have to say as a committee, are we allowed to be the sweethearts of the executive? Do we want the cover-up emerging out of this issue? Or do we in fact want to do what is truly right to the people of this country? This, Honorable Kubai, is the either or. And it's not, I'm not placing before you an ultimatum. I'm placing before you
just the fact that they present themselves constitutionally. I'm not simply sitting here saying to you, well, maybe, okay, let's actually consider, let's do this, let's do that. This, if we don't find and support the work that the public protector has done here, we are saying to South Africa, ignore the public protector. So her finding in any context is irrelevant. And that would be the biggest insult A, we can give, and B, the biggest downfall we would have been given to the public protector. I urge, Chairperson, this is a vital matter. I urge that when the members on the other side, I would be even willing to consider, no time is against them, but if they need to take 10 minutes to consult, phone whoever they need to phone, I'm happy for them to take their time. But the principle here is absolutely vital. Because if we then take a decision as a committee here to say, well, actually the public protector's report is irrelevant and the remedial action, we will note them or consider them, whatever the English appropriate word is, then we'll sit here today and say, well, we've sent an insult to a constitutional arrangement, and I simply cannot be a part of the process. And I think as a party, we're here to take a very strong stance on that. So I want to offer to the members the time they needed to make the appropriate decision in this regard.
A point of clarity, Chairperson.
This what is point of clarity?
Chairperson, I have a problem with your office, your chair. There is a constant, well-orchestrated misrepresentation by our colleagues here about what the President said to the Speaker and to the public protector. And we are not correcting them. For your accent, the President says, I deem the following to be appropriate. The Minister of Police must determine whether I am liable for any payment on the security upgrades, considering legislation, past practices, culture, and findings contained in the respective report. The President is saying, public protection, I am not going to instruct the Minister of Police to determine how much I should pay. I am going to ask the Minister of Police to determine whether I should pay or not. Can you please correct the members there? Because they are actually saying we must agree with what the President says and we must not agree with what the public protector is saying. And that is unconstitutional. Can you please correct the chair in that?
No, remember, you have just read the letter of the President. There's no need for me to correct anything. Because the view that you put forward, there's another view in terms of the remedial action. So obviously what you are saying and have read from the President is his view. I can't explain that. I'm not the author of that letter.
Chairperson.
So
just for the last time, let me tell
honourable members.
No.
No, honourable member. You've asked for your point of order. In fact, you elaborated and explained in detail. Let's give now to the honourable member the opportunity who has stand up before you.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I was late, and I also heard Dr. Motsepa arguing to say that we've exhausted the discussion.
I don't think we've exhausted it.
Not at all. There are many issues put around here that we did not touch. You can argue that we cannot do this and we do not know this. On the same instance, the majority party wants to use their majority to prevent this committee from acquiring the necessary information. We don't want to hear. We don't want to know. Now, with all due respect, Chairperson and colleagues, I was a member of the ad hoc committee in the previous parliament. What is now being suggested is worse, even what happened in that process. Honourable Kubai was late. She is full-blown now on the side of the President in terms of what the procedure should be. We can't go any further because we are now waiting for the process of domestic police and instructed by the President. Public protect doesn't exist. Couldn't happen. Now, on a personal note, Chairperson, we can all speak for ourselves. I'm not a taxpayer. I can never accept that my taxpayer money is being used to enrich the President of South Africa. It's unacceptable. Why should anyone not accept that? Why should the public accept that? I don't want to take it any further. I don't know who does. Dr. Motsepa is arguing. There's a dispute in terms of his remedial action. Maybe it means this, maybe it means that. You don't want to look into it. You don't want this to court case exactly. You want to set it right here tonight. Now, I've been a member of this parliament since 1994, and members who know me know that I'm quite a reasonable person. But we also know that since the start of the fifth parliament, things changed in this parliament. How did it change? Our collective EFF changed parliament. I, as a reasonable person, was of view that they are wrong. I am wrong, they are right. The way that they operate seems to be the correct way. Because the majority party wants to use and misuse its majority to force through unconstitutional things. I cannot be part of that. I'm sorry. I represent 10 other parties. I will go back to them and say I'm not prepared to present you any further. Because if I stay in this committee, I will be part of unconstitutional process, anything to protect President Zuma. We will even put the constitution on the altar. You don't mind. If you want to do that, you do that. I will be not part of that. The tragedy is that EFF in the way that I'm acting in Parliament now seems to be correct. That's a tragedy. And why? Because of the minority party flaunting the constitution, flaunting everything, because they want to protect the president.
The last speaker on this, you must also respond if you want to make a phone call. But I'm not going to allow time for phone calls, I'm sorry. No, you can make your intervention a little later.
Yeah, fortunately I have enough at time. I can call anyone I want to call. So if that need arrives. But as of now, there's no need for me to call anyone. Because I came to this meeting today as a member who has been appointed to serve in this committee. I didn't receive any call from anyone. So as of the issue of the NEC meeting, unfortunately some of us were none of us here is a member of the NEC. So we don't know what was discussed in the NEC meeting. We will not enter that space. Fortunately, you have people who briefed you on that one. Till that we didn't have that luxury of being briefed of what was discussed in that. Then, Honorable Jefferson, I think what is happening here is that many things are raised about the president, things that are not relevant to this proposal. This shows us that some of us, we are a little bit obsessed about the president. So the real reason we are saying that we are not calling anyone to come here, number one, we are not reviewing the public protector's report or any reports for that matter. We are not reviewing that. As a committee of parliament, as honorable members, you should know that whenever a committee receives a presentation of some sort or a report, we engage on that report, discuss it, and make our own report and recommendation to parliament as regards to the next level committee. That's it. What is so different about this committee deliberating on the report and making recommendations and debating in the National Assembly? What is so different about it? So, we are on the right track, Honorable Chairperson. Our colleagues have their right to disagree with us, and we are not calling anyone to agree with us. This is our view as the ANC. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Members, the both
just, views... Just on a point of privilege.
Point of privilege. That's a nice one. Let me grant you your privilege.
I just want you to quote the two proposals. Just repeat the two proposals. Because we say, this one, let's call people who have made a list, and then let's take the remedial actions as they are. The ANC say, no one is going to be called, and the remedial actions of the public protector must be subjected to the change. Okay? I'm wrong. Then change. Put the two proposals. Let's see what is the proposal say. Yeah.
So I will allow the ANC just to clarify the question from the Honorable Malema. Let me not do that.
Constitution of the Republic of South Africa says that the public protector can investigate any matter in state affairs
there are different views on media election. In your view, on that side of the house, is that remedial view, remedial action is binding. We are saying remedial action may be peremptory or mandatory. And that question was not addressed and solved by the Supreme Court of Appeals. But our view this side is that remedial action is not binding. It has the status of a recommendation. And then, because we have different views on remedial action, it would be not right for this committee to say, take a decision that remedial action is binding, because that is an opinion of some of you, not all of us. But we are saying on the balance of evidence by academics and by literature, legal literature, remedial action is not binding. So this does not mean that we are changing the Constitution. The Constitution had not told us whether remedial action is binding or not binding, but the Constitution is subject to interpretation. And competent people, academics, and courts who have the Constitution have not come to the position that we're advocating. So it's unfair and, in fact, wrong to suggest that the ANC wants to act unconstitutional, because the Constitution has not told us whether media election is binding or not binding. So something that is open for interpretation, and I think in this parliament, we are makers of the laws, and therefore we also have the right to say what the law that we make means.
Chairman, I know you would like to move on, but the point that Motsekga is making is vital. It's going to end in the Constitutional Court. And I don't want this committee tonight to take a decision on information given that is not necessarily correct, because it has huge implications. If need be, that we resume tomorrow morning, we get that court case, if need be, that we look at it, because the policy respect chairperson, the colleagues of the ruling party are listening, and they've got their own views, I understand that. They're listening to what Dr. Motsekga. It's technically not correct. It's not true to say that the majority of academics have a certain point of view. That Dr. Motsekga has the Constitution in front of him. Could I ask him to read with me, section 182.1, in the way that we read acts and laws of Parliament? It says, the public protector has the power, sub 2, in terms of C, that the public protector has the power to take appropriate remedial action. She has the power to take, and she took. It's in her report. If I stand up to Motsekga correctly now, he's arguing to his colleagues, he's got the majority, that we don't have to take that too seriously, because there's a difference of opinion. In his opinion, it's recommendations. I'm saying, chairperson, this will be the end of a Constitutional Court case. I'm asking you, don't force a decision tonight. Let's get that court case in front of us. Let's all have copies of that. It needs to be, let's get constitutional experts in front of this committee before we take the decision, because it's got huge implications.
Chairperson, can I make a proposal? Because at this stage it's clear to me that we need constitutional and legal input. I think it's clear to me there are other questions on the table. Can I make a proposal that without voting on the process, then we suspend proceeding now, and that in fact, first thing in the morning tomorrow, we continue process so that we can reach the decision, being that the agenda of tomorrow might be around this decision as a way forward.
Chair, just to read where the colleague was reading, you know, Honorable Motsekga knows very well, you don't take recommendation, you make recommendation. And the Constitution says to take appropriate remedial action. to take it. So it can't be a recommendation. It's an action. And this is very clear in this matter. And I agree with what Honorable Maiman is saying, that this is a very serious constitutional matter. We don't take vote on it or conclude on it. We all go our separate ways. Anyway, we're here for 2 days. Tomorrow we come back to it. And then make a decision tomorrow, including the issue of summoning people. The summoning of people does not mean presentation of new evidence, but rather taking you through the report, including sharing some light on some points which we might be disagreeing on here. And if the public protector is sitting there, he can share some light and we find one another. So I don't know why we deny ourselves such opportunity. So I think that the best thing is, let's postpone the matter tomorrow. Let's all do our own further consultations on the matter, both politically and legally. And then tomorrow we can then meet with one another again, and then a ruling is made.
Well, honourable members, I think it's now 20:30 in the evening. I think it's a fair request that we return tomorrow morning refreshed. And but then we must really get to this point that is on the table now. The issue in front of us, Honorable Shabambu, be careful what you wish for. You may get it. Now, honorable members, let's reconvene in the morning. We'll start at this point the issue of there's no consensus around it, the issue of the any person or entities to appear in front of committee, and then secondly, the issue of the interpretation around the report of the public protector as far as the election is concerned. We're starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, yes. The meeting is suspended on all members.